Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's Tuesday, and the show starts now. And if you want to be a part of it, 312-981-7200. If you want to vocalize your thoughts, if you want to just listen, you're free to do that as well.
How about if I just think my thoughts?
You can do that. Please do that.
I might owe you an apology.
You owe me an apology?
Why?
Why? Because why?
Because I was on your butt yesterday because you were giving the Bears one more game, and if they didn't do anything, which they didn't, you were finished watching the games for the season.
Yeah.
And I said, that's all we have. You have to watch.
Right.
Someone that I live with is jumping on your bandwagon.
Is not Jimmy not going to watch anymore? Is he also out? I'm out. Is he out?
He's done. And it breaks my heart because he's always watched a Bears game.
Me too. That's the Sunday noon tradition.
Yeah.
Is you sit down and you watch the Bears game. Here's what I was thinking last night. Now, follow me on this. I know it moves around in a lot of different angles. It will veer just a little bit, which the Bears running game doesn't, but my analogy will. Let's say you had a friend that you've had for your entire life through good times and bad times. You've had up years, you've had down years, but they have been your friend for your entire life. But when you go to their house every week for 3 hours on a Sunday or sometimes Monday, they just keep punching you in the head over and over for 3 hours. They just keep punching you in the head over and over and over. At some point, wouldn't you say, I need to find myself a different friend because this is not a good friend?
I wouldn't find myself a different friend. I would just lose that friend.
Immediately, right?
Yeah, because why would you
You'd say my face hurts because that friend keeps punching me in the face. I need to stop visiting that friend.
Does your face hurt?
My face is killing me.
Okay, so weren't the Cubs like this a few years ago?
Yes.
Yeah,
right?
And
people were patient with them that they were rebuilding a new organization.
But they were rebuilding a new organization.
There's no evidence of that here. The difference is the Ricketts family hired Theo Epstein and his people to guide them in a proper direction. Yeah, it was a leap of faith. Everybody was going, well, he did it in Boston, but can they really do it here? And the answer, as we all see, is yes, they could. The Bears don't have that. You know, the McCaskey family is like, it's like an unfit parent. You know how there's some kid on your block who, even though they're 9 years old, they run around in their underwear with ice cream stains all over their face all the time. And you go, their parents should not be parents. They're awful parents. That's the McCaskeys. They're awful parents.
What do they need to do, Bill?
Sell the team. Give the team away. Just give it to anybody.
All I heard Jim muttering all morning, Cutler is uncoachable.
He's right.
He is uncoachable. He doesn't want to win. His teammates don't want to win to give any cred to Cutler. He is uncoachable.
True. He's had so many offensive coordinators, and I say offensive, I mean offensive coordinators. They've had two new offensive coordinators since we started talking about this 5 minutes ago. They just switch every couple of minutes. It's a new offensive coordinator. Each one lamer than the last. They don't know how to guide the team forward at all.
But
zero.
On paper, he's a good quarterback. Kevin keeps telling us that. Statistically. All right, wait. Now Kevin has new information.
I've always said he's an average quarterback.
All right.
But that's not how you guide a team to any kind of playoffs or championship, is by getting an average quarterback.
Well, where do you get a good quarterback,
and
why
just,
haven't
they
we?
They don't just grow on trees. You got to get lucky, and you got to draft well, and it's a process.
The guy who played for the Eagles yesterday had never played football before in his life until last night. Never
he
even
played
heard
week one.
He never even heard of football. They just picked they had a lottery in Philadelphia. This guy won the lottery. They let him quarterback the Eagles. He ran circles around us.
After the game, coach said, just so you know, that was the Bears. That's not real football.
Right.
I feel really terrible. You were bad-mouthing the Bears. I was trying to defend them yesterday.
I know.
And people were texting and saying, how do you think I feel? I have season tickets. My girlfriend, Sue, and her husband, Jeff, they have season tickets. They love the Bears.
Yeah.
They're going to still go to the games because it's an event, but I feel sorry for them.
If the Bears handed me 10 season tickets and said, these belong to you, they're on the 50-yard line, row 3, these are yours, I'd say thanks, but no thanks.
Maybe you're their good luck charm.
No.
Maybe if you're all in
they
it,
don't
they'll
have a good
win
luck
it.
Charm. It's just impossible. Here's another, if I may, here's another fine example of what the Bears management and ownership have accomplished. They had a guy named Matt Forte who's one of the best in football. Anyone who knows football knows this guy can do anything he wants whenever he wants. He can catch. He can run. He's just the best. They decided last year that he's not in their future. You don't need Matt Forte. So week one for the Jets, his new team, all he did was have three touchdowns in the game. Right now he's the second leading running back in football, just a couple yards shy of the leader. He's amazing. The Bears went, that's not the kind of guy we need on our team.
Too good. That's right. What they said. Too right. good.
That winning attitude, that does not play here in Chicago. Thanks very much. The C on their helmets, Wendy, doesn't stand for Chicago. It stands for can't.
I can't even defend them anymore.
It's impossible to defend them. And I don't even feel sorry for the Bears. I don't feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for people who go, you know what? There was a bright spot here. There was a bright spot there. I'm gonna watch them again next week. I'm going to watch them the next week. I'm a Bears fan. Why would anyone do that to themselves for 3 hours a week? 3 hours on a Sunday when you could do anything else? Why in the world would anyone sit through that and punish themselves?
I have no answers anymore. Kevin, come on.
Well, if they're not going to have a shot to win, I'm going to flip to the Red Zone channel and watch for fantasy football purposes, not the Bears.
Right.
I'll flip to the Bears every once in a while, but right. That's it.
It's funnier to watch the Bears than an episode of Two Broke Girls.
That's sad. That is really sad.
I just
sad.
Took out two institutions in one line.
I will say, I think you're awful in the fact that they are in a rebuild. They haven't maybe come outright and said it, but they are. It is that process right now. They just don't have the depth. It's, you know,
there's no depth at all.
One guy goes down, it's catastrophic. Yeah. And, you know, that takes a few years to build up. So I think management and coaching is there in some aspects, but it's going
to
take a while.
You have to rebuild when there's nothing. So, of course, they're in rebuilding phase.
Right. But that's such a blanket statement. All sports teams do that. As soon as it's obvious they're not winning, they just throw that out. But even when a team is good, when the Blackhawks have been as good as they are, they're still rebuilding. They're still looking toward the future.
Every
even though
team is.
I know. And now I will say something positive about the Bears. They have a couple players that are exceptional players. Royal is an amazing player. Long is an amazing player. They've got some really good players on the team. It just doesn't matter. They just can't win. They don't know how to win.
I don't even get excited about trying new appetizers or making chili when the Bears are on.
Right.
It's really fizzled.
It puts a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it?
My food?
No. The team. No. The team.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not into football that much, but it's like the game would be on all the time at our house.
Right.
So you'd come in, you'd watch a couple of plays. I'd make appetizers. I'd make chili.
Right.
I don't even want to hear the noise.
There's no right because it's just negative. And I want Wendy.
Can
I
say something?
Yeah.
I tuned in last night, and who? I didn't even know who the announcer was. Is that a new team for Monday Night Football?
I'm not sure who did the game last night. I don't know who did the game.
All right. Well, there was a lot of enthusiasm even there.
I watched the whole game except for the last 5 minutes. At the last 5 minutes, I redlined. I went, I can't even do this anymore.
David, the Bears still suck.
Oh, it was so tough to watch. And talking about Forte, I think it sort of summed it up at the very first possession last night. We make it downfield. Cutler doesn't look terrible. And then we can't get into the end zone, so we go for a three. And what does our brand-new kicker do on the opening day, his first game at Soldier Field? He shanks it.
Hanks it left.
And what was the yardage on that? Because statistics, Robbie Gould never missed something at that distance.
It was some yard attempt, I believe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is what you make 95. This is what you get paid to do. And he just couldn't connect.
And Cutler's.
And after that,
Oh, go on. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, that just summed it up for me. And I'm like, we lost this game. That right there just kind of foretold what the rest of the game was going to look like. And I have to agree, Cutler, he's a good quarterback. I always say he's got moments of greatness, but I don't see a team that sits around him that really likes him.
Uncoachable and not a leader. That's what I heard all morning long. He is no leader. He is uncoachable. Okay, Jim, that's enough.
He's got incredible ability.
You're very smart man.
He's got such great ability, but he doesn't know what to do with it. It's like giving somebody an incredible gift and then just not having an instruction sheet on what to do with that gift.
Well, how does he not get how come he can't make that happen?
I don't know.
You know, and the thing is, you watch him and he just pouts on the sideline. He's not talking to his teammates.
Yeah.
He's not trying to encourage anyone. He's sitting there in the corner with his head down. His body language just tells it all. And it's you got to kick him off the side. We need to rebuild. We need a new quarterback for this city.
But watch the other quarterbacks in the NFL and what they're doing when they're on the sidelines. Watch Drew Brees. Watch Aaron Rodgers. Watch any of the guys that win football games. Watch the interaction between them and the rest of the team. He just doesn't have it.
Absolutely. And hasn't for the 8 years that he's been.
No.
He's entitled, it looks like. Chicago owes him something to be here. No, it's been too long at this point. He owes us something.
Agreed.
We still have a lot of Bears apologists. We will read these texts when we come back. Dave, thank you for calling. 312-981-7200.
And wah, also, wah. I know. Wah,
that's
wah,
all I can think of.
That's the only noise that sums it up. In addition to reading the text, Kevin has to share a moment of something that went on during the Bears game yesterday that I wasn't aware of. So that's coming up. Stick around. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder recapping last night's Bears loss to Arbor Park Middle School at Soldier Field. An ugly game, bringing the Bears to 0-2. I know a lot of people are as upset as we are. And before we read any texts, and we got a lot of texts, I can't remember a time where I wanted so badly to be wrong. I wanted to be wrong. I wanted to come here today and have you grill me and Kevin be upset with me and say, all you did yesterday is talk about how awful the Bears are. Look at what they did last night. I wanted to be wrong. I watched the whole game hoping to be wrong. I wasn't wrong. That team is awful.
No, 847. I mean, I totally agree with you. I'm on your side now. I owe you an apology.
You know when you go to the dentist and he puts that thing that's shaped like a hook in your mouth and it just makes that sucking noise?
Yes.
That's what I heard for 3 hours from Soldier Field last night.
Didn't your mouth get dry?
Yeah, it did.
To each his own, if you don't want to watch, then don't. If you want to put them down, there are people in this town absolutely, positively loving the Bears no matter what.
Is that from the Marquis de Sade? Is that who texted that in?
That can't be true.
It can't be true. What would be wrong with somebody who enjoyed what they saw last night?
Well, they don't enjoy what they saw last night, but they have hope.
Hope
and
is a great
tickets.
Thing. That's a sad thing.
Bill, why do you waste your time playing tennis every week? I think that's a stupid sport. It's totally
But
different.
I win. It's fun to
and
win.
And even if you don't, you try.
Right.
Your face says, hey, I'm in it to win it.
Right. And it's good for your health. Was last night's game good for anybody's health?
No. You praise the Cubs, Bill, for getting younger, and you blast the Bears for doing the same thing.
For getting younger? The Bears' problem is not that they're not getting
it's not
younger.
The age.
No.
And this is true. The difference between the Cubs and the Bears is the amount of games. 16 very limiting.
If the Bears played 162 games, that would really be sad. They'd be 0-162.
That would be terrible.
That would be awful. There are some differences in the two situations, but all the differences between the Cubs situation and the Bears situation are not pleasant ones. The Bears had good ownership and good management and put together a great blueprint for the future. The Bears don't have that. They don't have a drafting table to make a blueprint.
They have money to buy a drafting table.
They spent a lot of money last year.
312 Bill is so right. Cutler is a used car. Hang on. is a used car the Bears bought thinking it would get them by. That's not a problem. The problem is the Bears refuse to admit they bought a lemon and keep dumping money into it. I'm with Bill. I'm done.
They've had so many opportunities to part ways with Jay Cutler, and it's not all Jay Cutler's fault. I'm very hard on him. It's not all his fault, but a lot of it is. Even last night, at the beginning, he had this great drive going, and then his last pass should have been picked off by an Eagle. It wasn't. They dropped it. But for every two or three good things he does, then he does something horrendously bad, and it costs them.
All right. I don't know.
I wish it were better news. I swear to you, I wanted so badly to be wrong, but you saw what I saw last night.
I didn't see all
They're
of it.
They're awful.
Bill and Wendy, I love you guys, but it's called loyalty. Stick with your team through the thick and thin, up and down. It makes the wins that much better. Thanks, Mark. My husband also went on to say he's a White Sox fan. If they're sucking, he's done watching. I said, I will not say that on the air. But there is some truth to that. Right now, the season's pretty much over. And the Cubs are amazing.
Don't you think when you're younger, you say to yourself, you know what? I'm 23 years old. If they're having a bad season or a couple bad seasons, that's okay. It's going to balance out. But once you get a little bit older in your late 30s, early 40s, in your 50s, in your 60s, you go, I don't have enough sand left in my timer to waste my time on something this horrendous. They don't want to win. Why do I want to watch them not win every week?
And the Sox will come back. It's just for the end of this year. It's not.
The White Sox will come back at some point.
Hockey, baby. That's all I'm waiting for. All right. Did Kevin have something he wanted to share with us?
Yeah. We were talking a little while ago about how Jay Cutler, if you watch him on the sidelines, he doesn't do what your average winning quarterback does. He's not
like look interested.
Right.
He really doesn't.
He doesn't. He's got this weird cocky look on his face, and you go, to be that cocky, you have to have achieved something. You can't just be that cocky with no achievements.
It's just the way he looks. He can't really help it.
Yeah.
But Adam Hogue tweeted out the cover of the program for last night.
Yeah.
And he was on the cover, and he just looked like he's like, well, why did you pick me?
So, Kevin, share with everybody what was happening with Jay Cutler on the sidelines for a portion of the game.
Well, I'll start with, I think, that dialogue of the body language and blah, blah, blah. I think that's just tired and old and irrelevant, personally. That's
all
just
right.
Me. But after he had thrown that interception, Pernell McPhee, who is physically unable to play right now, he's
right.
On the sidelines. He's like the defensive captain. He's a passionate, fiery guy. As Jay's walking off, he gets in Jay's face and is shouting at him, I think basically to the effect of, get your head out of your butt and, you know,
right.
Pull it together.
Right.
So I don't know how to feel about that.
But did that surprise you? Because it doesn't
surprise...
It's not
a feel-good on that team.
No.
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 And it's not all Jay Cutler's fault.
No.
I'm sorry.
There's
it
a good
really
chance
isn't.
He was playing injured, too, but that's... You know, if you're playing injured, you got to have the wherewithal to say, okay, maybe I shouldn't be playing right.
Right
now.
Take me out, coach.
Isn't it a coach that should decide that?
Yeah, but that coach, Fox has made so many mistakes. I mean, the season.
I thought everybody was so excited when he came here.
The wrong guy.
Get Ditka back.
Bring back Ditka. And Abe Gibran. We need Abe Gibran back. All right, we'll take a quick break. A big show ahead of you. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy has a problem that I think is unique to only you. I don't think anyone else on the planet has the problem that you currently have.
I am in need of a finial for my roof.
You need a new finial.
You didn't know what a finial was till moments ago.
A roof finial?
Yeah, one of those roof finials.
Mm. Do you know what that is, Steve?
Sure, I know what a finial
is. Yeah, it's on an old Victorian house. I have a turret.
In case the Saxons try to overtake you.
No! There's a rounded turret part of the house, and it...
Do you live at medieval times?
Yes, I do. My husband calls me a wench all the time, yeah. And we have grog.
You do?
Yeah.
And no silverware?
Feed with your fingers.
Yeah.
That's the fun at my house.
Honey, pick up a flagon of ale on the way home. We're all out.
I cannot find a finial. I need a zinc, preferably.
Sure, of course. If you're getting a finial, you should get a zinc finial.
It's broken. The one we currently have is broken. We're getting a new roof. I
Can
thought
I
this
ask
was
how it got broken, or is
know.
That personal?
A bird impaled itself on their finial.
Storm.
Do they break
wear and
easily?
Tear. Not typically, but it might have been broken when we bought the house. I'm not really sure.
I would have asked for half off on the house if my finial was broken.
Do you know how much a finial is? They're pretty expensive.
I'm going to get, can I guess?
Yes.
$40?
Yeah, if
higher
you want a
lower.
Small one. It's on the top of a roof.
Right.
And it's usually like 3 feet to 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
Made out of copper or
zinc
covered copper or aluminum.
Right, but it's like 2.5 stories up, right?
Yes.
It would have to be, right?
Well, why don't you fake it? Like,
make
some,
one.
Paint some cardboard
Styrofoam.
Copper?
No.
Like a styrofoam finial.
Pressed
that's what people
wood,
do.
Copper, and just put it up there.
There are finial stores, but they're like...
There are?
Sure.
Yeah, you can go online and look for architectural finials, but they're like
in this century or in other
bucks.
Centuries? Wait, no, they're not. They're
$700? That was a cheap one.
Yeah,
they can go
it's crazy.
Thousands of dollars.
I tried to have a ball on my house, just a circular, you know, on a post, a ball, like maybe...
Sure.
2 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
And someone wanted $500 for one.
See what I'm saying? And I looked on eBay and I found this guy in Franklin, Tennessee who makes them. He's a copper crafter and
yeah.
He makes a finial, but it's not exactly the, I want like a big ball on it. I'm sorry. I like the balls. I do.
She does it on purpose.
I know that.
I do,
I
though.
Does.
I like
I
spheres.
So. Right.
I think it would look good on the house.
Won't he cut? He'll custom make one, won't he?
Well,
you could draw up a plan and he'll have him go
thing.
Through with it.
I've emailed him already. He answered me in 10 minutes. I had a couple of questions for him. It's beautiful copper work. Copper turns patina where it's kind of greenish as it gets weathered, and it looks pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Right.
But I want to physically see it and touch it. And if I order it from Franklin, Tennessee, and it arrives and I don't like it, you can't return it.
Does he have any sample work in the area that you can go and visit? Although you wouldn't be able to touch it, but you could at least see what it looks like in person. Is that possible?
I guess. I've seen pictures, but I mean, I want to see it. And there has to be somebody in the Chicago metro area who's a sheet metal worker.
Right.
Or I don't even know, an architectural craftsman. I need a finial.
Why is it important that you touch it? I'm confused by that part.
I just want to see if it's not flimsy.
You know, once it's on your roof, the touching is over. You can't touch it anymore.
I just want to see it. I just want to see it, hold it up, and look at my house and go, yes, that'll look good. Because there's various kinds. There are spheres or balls. I mean, I looked for a double bald finial on the internet, and if you search
that, on Craigslist and see who responds.
Yeah, no one's surprised by that one.
No, but
you'll get a lot of email. Right.
I like the spherical ones.
What's the other option other than round?
They have like a fleur-de-lis.
You might have to help me with that one. I don't know what that is.
What's the football team that has that?
The New Orleans Saints.
Yeah. Oh, I do know what that is.
I don't want that. That's too fancy. It's kind of a tall and narrow house, so I want like something clunkier, not just a spire that goes straight up. I want some kind of girth to it.
Right. Who can blame you?
Stop it.
Do you know what a lot of houses by me have? And I don't know why. Our house doesn't have it, but I see this on a lot of houses. And I think houses of this era from the 20s and the 30s and maybe into the 40s had this. It's on various parts of their chimney or around it. It's like a very flowery letter S on one side. And then on the other side, it's like a flip picture of that.
That's usually their initial.
No, it's always the letter S by me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe they're relatives.
Except for smokestack.
Yeah, I think
it's just a cast iron little decorative thing on the chimney.
But I don't know why I see quite a few of those. Yeah, I guess it is. But a house would look, I mean, I don't know if those are in the price range. You just said $700. I thought they were $40. If somebody said, hey, you need a new S on your chimney, it'll cost $700. I don't think I would pay it.
Our house comes to a point, so it needs something there, and the finial on it is broken.
Right.
It looks like somebody put a soccer ball up on the top of our house.
Once you buy it for $1,000, you're going to have someone put it up
there. Well, we're getting a new roof, and that's what they said they'd put it up there.
But now's the time.
Yeah.
Right. They include finial installation as part of it.
I'm sure I'll have to pay extra for that, but I mean, they're going to be up there.
Right, you might as well.
You know, finilation.
Yeah, is that what it's called?
And then my son Dylan, which I didn't think he was the huge Star Wars fan that he is, but he said, I have a great idea. I didn't even run this past Jim because I know Jim would say yes.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Death Star?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Dylan said, I know you're not as into Star Wars as we are, but, you know, perhaps since you want that big ball thing, you could have it shaped as like the Death Star, so you couldn't really tell, but we would know it's that.
And do you know how much that would do for the resale value of the house? It would go through the roof. People would want that so badly.
The finial does go through the roof.
Oh, it does.
I thought that was kind of a good idea, but
it is a good idea.
But, I mean, you wouldn't know from the street.
Right,
you would know. Yeah, and then so you could buy a house and change the finial. You can get them anywhere. You know, I went on eBay. There was this.
Do they have a category on eBay for these? They do?
Well, there are some entries.
I didn't know that.
Again, you got to make sure it fits your roof.
Sure.
I don't know the style
of the house. Yep.
I just don't know where to go, and there has to be someone in the area that makes these things. If there's a guy in Franklin, Tennessee.
Yeah, right.
Why isn't there somebody in the Chicago metro area that I can go look at it?
They should have
that. I want to see if it's as tall as I am.
Right.
I don't want it that tall. I want a 3-footer.
Yeah.
Ted, what are you talking about?
That's actually my question for you. I mean, I had a really great weekend. I had the day off yesterday, so I'm kind of a little bit out of it. But I'm listening to this conversation, and it feels like a takeoff of an Austin Powers movie. I'm not really sure what you guys are talking about. I'm still not really sure, but I'm hearing a lot of things that just sound really off.
Ted, I'm in the conversation, and I don't understand it.
It's a roof finial.
Sure right. is.
All right, Ted. Whatever. Have a great rest of the week, okay? I hope it gets better.
Me too.
So we got 3 feet and two. What are the?
Whatever.
Look in the yellow pages.
I looked everywhere. I looked online.
Nothing.
Ron, what do you know of?
I'm a building material salesperson, and one of my clients does custom work like that. They're in Hillside, which I think is close to where you are.
All right.
And it's called J&J Sheet Metal.
All right. So if I look under sheet metal places, chances are they could construct something like that.
Not all of them, but some of them do some nice custom work in copper, and that's what you have to find out. Like someone that'll do that, you know, they'll make these adornments for your peaks or your, you know, the pointed part of the roofs.
Perfect.
You can say finial in front of us. We're all adults here.
Well, it may not be a finial because a lot of them, they do even like weather vanes and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't want a weather vane. But thank you, Ron. I will look in J&J's sheet metal in Hillside.
Weather vane makes it seem too like a Munster house
yeah.
or Adams Family house, doesn't
I
it?
I did talk to Frank Fontana, and he told me to go to Salvage One, which is they get a bunch of old things
right.
and resalvage it, but they didn't currently have any finials. Oh. I called them. But Lou Manfredini would know.
He could make you one.
While
driving to work, he could craft you one. He's that good.
All right, Nick, we only have a second here. You have ideas?
A couple places you could look. A couple of companies you could look at their website for different architectural. Most of it's cast iron material. It's Texas Metals, and the other one is Allen Architectural. Search those out, and that might give you something to think about.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
That'll help.
I need a finial.
And you need to see it up close and in person.
Well, I want to see it. Don't you understand that? If you order it from somewhere else.
Yep. Yep. Cradle it.
Shut up. All right. Tech Tuesday. Should we take a break?
Yes.
Talk to Bridget Carey?
I thought that was Tech Tuesday.
That was Architect Tuesday.
Right. There's more coming. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bridget Carey on the line, CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. And how's that iPhone 7 going for everyone?
Well, for the most part, people always find something to complain about, right? If you get the glossy one that everyone wanted because it was a new type of finish on the back, you will complain, oh, there's too much fingerprinting and it's too easy to scratch. And now another complaint that's cropping up in the past couple of days is the hissing sound that it could make. Apparently, for some people online, they've been complaining that when the phone is under heavy load, you can hear a little hum, a little buzz, a little static in the phone itself where the processor is. And so people are now going, well, they put their phone to their ear and they go, I hear it too. And part of me wonders, some of it could be real and some of it could be like when you put your ear up to the seashell and you hear the ocean, like how much are you thinking you're hearing it because you think it's out there and how much is it really happening? We haven't heard it ourselves. But when I talked about it on my CNET update show, I said, why don't you get in touch with me if you have this. Within like less than an hour, I got 10 emails from people going, I hear it. They're sending me recordings. So Apple's offering to exchange such a problem. But, you know, it's the equivalent of like really pushing your computer to the limit and you're going to hear a little hum sometimes. Maybe it's not dampened properly. In this case, everyone who says they heard it, it's because they were doing something like backing up everything from their phone from the cloud or doing something very intense. But others have emailed me to say they do nothing and it's making the sound. We'll have to just kind of hear more about this as the days go by.
I think they've packed too much into this phone because it sure seems like it.
Yeah.
Because I've never had a humming in this iPhone 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where, you know, they make these processors even more powerful. So maybe, you know, and then how many times are they made too fast in the manufacturing process? And maybe something wasn't, you know, put on just right. So maybe the sound isn't dampened as well. Who knows?
All right.
I would find the sound soothing, to be honest with you.
Not when you're on the phone,
no,
though.
All
what
right.
if you're talking to somebody and you hear this audible buzz in the background?
Be disturbing.
What else do we need to know in the tech world? We have a shortened Tech Tuesday segment today.
Well, real quick, Comcast is going cellular. Apparently, today, the cable giant CEO announced that they're going to launch a Comcast mobile network by mid-next year. And the twist, though, is that Comcast's network, so to speak, really runs on Verizon's network.
Oh.
It's designed to first jump to one of the 15 million Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots across the nation. So sometimes there's hotspots in parks, but also in people's homes, the routers, they are hotspots. And so in between the spaces, though, it'll be Verizon. And this is for Comcast to kind of like take advantage of going against AT&T and others who offer, you know, cable and wireless services.
And Bridget, if we have we only have another minute or two, but what's the story with Lyft and Uber? They're looking toward the future with self-driving cars. What exactly is going on there?
Well, you have Uber just the other day kind of starting to release their fleet of self-driving cars in Pittsburgh, and then Lyft CEO wrote yesterday on a post that he sees the future of Lyft cars in 10 years being, like, the majority of them being self-driving cars, getting you from here to there. And everyone's working on this now. Even a group in Amsterdam, a research group, is now working on self-driving boats. So I think that's more exciting. But in general, this is something that a lot of the CEOs are pushing as, hey, it's right around the corner. And in fact, in some places, you know, you can pick up a car that is a self-driving car. But in the case of Pittsburgh, if you get one of those Uber cars, there's still someone behind the wheel. So it's not completely robot ruled yet, but, you know, it won't be long until maybe it will be.
You know what's next on the agenda? The self-driving baby strollers.
Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be tremendous.
They have something similar
like
that.
Really, yeah?
I've seen technology in suitcases that will follow the owner. So really it's self-driving in the sense that it's trying to go next to like one object and follow that object. And so I have seen that people have remote controlled things on baby strollers. Mm. I mean, I just had a baby. I was researching some strollers and I came across some super high-tech ones that just scared me. So I know it's out there whether or not we need it or not.
Oh, man.
You're right in the middle of the tech world, Bridget. If somebody said to you, hey, we're giving you this as a gift, it's a baby stroller and it moves itself, you don't have to touch it, you'd be a little leery, wouldn't you, right now?
Not gonna necessarily put my baby in robotic devices just yet. She could be a test subject when she's older.
But. All right, that's fair.
Well, thank you so much. And what can we look for on the CNET update when we go to CNET.com?
Well, today we're also talking about some new Google phones that are expected to be announced in 2 weeks at an October event. You know, so everyone's always curious on what new phones the big guys are coming up with. And so we already saw Samsung, Apple. Now Google's going to be next in 2 weeks.
Perfect. Thank you so much. She's Bridget Carey, CNET.com. You can find her. She's the host of the CNET Update. Thank you, Bridget.
Thanks.
Bye, Bridget. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news and then a lot more show coming your way. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and everything you need to know about your prostate, if you have one. First and foremost, it's not a prostrate.
No, it's prostate. That's right.
We have Chief of Urology and Director of John and Carol Walter Center for Urological Health at North Shore University Health Center, Dr. Michael McGuire, on the line with us. Hello, doctor.
Good afternoon. Thanks for calling, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, first and foremost, people that say prostrate are wrong. There's no second R in it.
You lie prostrate on the ground when you're getting your prostate checked.
Oh.
Sounds like fun. All right, without getting too graphic, and I am very stupid when I tell you this, I didn't realize women didn't have prostates until many years ago. I just assumed we all had a lot of the same inner parts, men and women, but just men have them, and this is something that needs to be checked. When is there a certain age? When do you get your prostate checked?
So, first of all, the prostate is part of the reproductive system for the male, and it also is involved with controlling the urine. And so we look for prostate cancer starting at age 50 in most men. Or unless you have a family history of prostate cancer or you're African-American, then we usually start about age 40.
And why is so African-American men are more prone to this?
Yeah, they get diagnosed with more advanced cancer or that it occurs earlier in their life, and so we want to look at them more carefully to make sure that we catch it early when it's very curable.
So what happens at the age of 50, 40 in African-American men, but 50 in non, what are we doing? What sort of a test goes on?
So first of all, so
are you sure you want to know this?
No, I don't want to, but it's Awareness Month. So if I'm going to know it, this is the month to know it.
So really, there are no symptoms. Prostate cancer has no symptoms until it spreads. And yeah. So what we ask you to do is to come in, and there are two components of the testing. The first is a blood test, and this is called the PSA test. The PSA test is not perfect. Many people have a low PSA and have prostate cancer. Some men have elevated PSAs and don't have cancer. And then the other component of the evaluation is a rectal examination where I use my finger to check your prostate.
What are you checking for?
I'm looking for hard spots.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Prostate cancers can be very firm, whereas normal prostate's nice and soft.
All right. And let's say somebody's going through this test and you do feel some firmness there. That's no reason to panic, right? What would happen?
Right. Yeah. At least 50% of people who have firm spots don't have cancer. But we want to catch it if prostate cancer is caught early. Sometimes you don't have to treat it at all. Sometimes, and then often, if you do have to treat it, you catch it when it's very curable. So that if you find it, the next step would be to go up to the next step, which would be a biopsy.
All right. Now, typically, does your regular doctor check your prostate at, like, physical exams, or is this something you need to go in and get done?
So they used to. And this was a very common prostate cancer is controversial. It's the most common cancer that we find in men, other than skin cancers. But it's many men, it's not clear whether diagnosing it early helps the vast majority of men. There's no question for individual men it can help, but not for all of them. So that's the... There have been many controversies, and the government actually came out and said, don't get blood tests, don't get physical examinations, about 4 or 5 years ago. And what we're seeing as urologists is more and more men coming in with cancers too late to cure. So we don't believe this study. We still believe you need to be checked, but your internist may or may not do these tests anymore.
If let's say you go in at the age of 50 and you have it checked and everything seems to be fine, do you go again in a year or 5 years? What's the interval after that?
So this is something that we're looking at to figure out what the interval is. Right now, we recommend every year.
Every year.
Just to check it.
And Dr. McGuire, there's a guy at the parking lot at Target that says he'll check it, but he's not to be trusted, right? I want to go to a doctor for this, right?
Well, not every week.
All right, good. That seems excessive. All right, good.
Well, I mean, you remember the old movies and sitcoms where a guy would go to the doctor's office and the doctor would grab a glove and say, turn around. That was part of a physical examination years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. Up until the last couple of years. And what we're seeing is a disease which we used to cure. Now, there are side effects of the cures, but that a disease we used to cure and make people live longer, now we're seeing the disease progress and present at a much more advanced stage when we can't cure it.
And no symptoms whatsoever, even if, like, since, you know, it's a urological thing, there's no problems with the stream or anything like that, that would tip you off that something's going on?
No, not for the vast majority of men. The vast majority of men have nothing. Occasionally we see some blood in the urine or slow stream or getting up multiple times at night, but almost always those are symptoms of other urologic processes we can help with. But the reality is most men don't have any symptoms, and it's truly asymptomatic until it spreads, and once it spreads, it's too late.
Dr. McGuire, is it one of those parts of your body, you know, as we all tend to live longer than we did generations ago, certain parts of the body just seem to erode and don't last as long as we do. Is the prostate one of those parts of the body like that?
Absolutely. And prostate cancer is almost inevitable. If you live long enough, you're going to have it at autopsy. Now, most men, like 80% of 80-year-old men have prostate cancer at autopsy. Most of them don't know they have it.
Yeah.
It just sits there and is asymptomatic. But if you live long enough, you will likely get prostate cancer.
How about that? Hmm.
something to look forward
so
to.
So do, but to your point, the best thing to do is go in, get checked, so that it doesn't become an issue. Get it fixed as soon as you can, huh?
In the vast majority of time, nowadays, we often watch people. We here at North Shore are often looking at people, and we have the largest series of men with prostate cancer. We're just watching. We're not doing any treatment. They're not getting any side effects from treatment. And because of that, as long as we know what kind of cancer you have, and we've got some specialized tests that we're running to look at men to help them to figure out, is my cancer something that's going to bother me, or is it something I'm going to die with and not from? And so that's very important that you go out and do look more aggressively at your cancer to find out if it's something that's ever going to bother you.
I know we're giggling about it and stuff, and it is kind of embarrassing, but cancer is not something you want. So go ahead, make an appointment. We are talking to Dr. Michael McGuire, Chief of Urology at North Shore University Health Center. Now, something else, are there any kind of tests you can take to see if you are more likely to get prostate cancer?
So that's one of the tests that we have developed here, and you can only get it here at North Shore. It's a genetic test which determines your risk of getting prostate cancer, and it's the best test that we've found, and it increases your likelihood much more than the classical description of, well, my dad had it or my brother had it. This test is better, and it's a proprietary test that we've developed here. And we would love to have people come up to take this test so we can give them a better idea should they be worried about this.
Dr. McGuire, is there some food or beverage that we should avoid or something we should load up on that's good for us prostate-wise?
So there are many different descriptions of things that may or may not be good. Tomatoes have been traditionally thought to be good because of the lycopene.
Lycopene. Everybody knows about lycopene.
But we don't know if that study's good or bad. What we do know is fewer calories are better for all cancers, and try and cut down on dietary fat. Things that are good for your heart, exercising, not being overweight, not smoking, drinking if you're so inclined, one or two glasses of red wine a day, all those things that are good for your heart are also good for your prostate.
Okay.
All right. It's that 50 is the magic number. That's when you have to go in and get all these uncomfortable tests done. You should get a colonoscopy at that time as well.
An oil change.
Not to get personal, but are you up to date on all these tests, Bill?
On most, but not all. I need to visit some doctors soon. I do.
All right. And is there any particular thing you need to do in advance of a prostate exam? You just show up, or do you have to not eat for a while? What's the deal with that?
You have to study the night before. Just come on in. Make an appointment to see us, 847-503-3000. We've got many partners who are involved in this study and research and just looking to do beyond the PSA to help people get a better idea of their risks and what we can do to help them.
Dr. McGuire, after you give a patient an exam, do you remain friends with that person, or do they just kind of sever ties after that?
Dinner and a movie.
All right. Well, we, again, September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and we are just here to help people be aware of some of the things they need to get checked to make their lives longer and happier.
Yep.
Dr. Michael McGuire, we thank you so much. You can go to northshore.org. And what's the phone number again?
847-503-3000.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Dr. Michael McGuire.
You have to make some appointments.
I do, don't I?
How about we do have a webcam?
Oh, boy. No. I don't think the internet's quite ready for that, Wendy. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I don't know if you heard, but in the last newscast, they made mention of the fact that there was a study over at AAA that said what I think a lot of us have suspected for years and years and years, and that is that using premium gasoline in your car actually gives you no benefit whatsoever.
It's just a waste of money.
Yeah. And that's from AAA.
Have you ever used it on any particular car? Didn't you on one of your cars?
My last car was an Audi, and it was a
I have an Innie.
I know. Thank you for that. As I was driving out of the lot, the salesman tapped on my door, my window. He was waving at me. Goodbye. Deal's been made. I own the car. Or I was leasing. I eventually owned the car. It took a few years. But he tapped on the window as I'm driving out. He goes, don't forget, premium gasoline only, which it never came up in our discussion about the car. And, you know, premium gasoline is about 45, 50, 60 cents more per gallon than regular gasoline. So for the entire duration that I owned that car, which was 6 years, I used premium gasoline, and it was a waste of money.
I have never used premium gasoline in any car I have ever purchased, ever.
See, my car requires it, and
it says from the manufacturer.
It says,
right.
Yeah.
It says use premium gas only, and that's what the one thing AAA did say. If your car requires premium gas, then you should use it, but if it doesn't, then you're wasting your money.
Interesting.
And where does it say it? On your literature? Does it say on the gas inside where it says use premium?
It says, and then when I was at the dealership, they told me use premium gas only.
It said that on the Audi that I owned, and my brother-in-law bought the exact same car less than a year later, never used premium gasoline, only used standard gasoline, never premium. His car lasted just the same as long as mine did. No difference whatsoever, except that I was out several thousand dollars in more expensive gasoline.
Exactly. And my question is, once you start with the premium like Kim has done, I would imagine it's probably worse than to switch to regular, because doesn't your car...
I don't know that it would matter.
I guess it's not.
I think once it's
a living thing where it gets accustomed to something. But.
Yeah, I would think you could go back and forth and back and forth. But once you realize your car's running at the same performance level with regular, why would you switch back?
Yeah, there are too many choices for everything.
Yeah.
I mean, have you gone to buy Coke lately? There's Diet Coke, Coke Zero, Coke with lemon, Cherry Coke, Vanilla Coke,
Zero.
There's too much.
Coke Zero.
You just have to stay a purist, Wendy, and then you don't have these problems.
I guess that would be it. And
that's how I am with, like, coffee, tea. Don't give me the foo-foo drinks. I just want the straight stuff. I'm
right.
Not going sweet, sugary, none.
But what about the mid-range gasoline, then?
That always confused me, because if you're going to play by their rules and buy the premium gasoline, there it is. If you're not, you have the cheap stuff. Who would go, I can't decide.
Are guilty.
Right.
I'll admit, my very first car was a Mercury Bobcat. I bought it from my across-the-street neighbor, Kristen. It was a great deal, but not very attractive, I'll tell you. It looked
Kristen
just like
or the car?
The car.
The car.
It looked like a Pinto. It was just the Mercury version of the Ford Pinto, a Mercury Bobcat. It had a really wide back end.
Oh, I know that car, sure.
Not attractive. But someone had told me, it was an older used car when I bought it, use the premium or the mid-range and it will run smoother. So I will admit that sometimes I put the mid-range in it. The silver is, I think, Amoco used to have.
Yeah.
But I didn't notice any difference. And then I just went back to the regular stuff.
And remind me, because you have your standard gasoline and then there's the silver or whatever the mid-range is.
Yeah.
And that's only like 10 cents more a gallon. But then once you go up to premium, it's 45 or 50 cents more per gallon.
I don't know.
And this is when the gas prices were at their all-time worst. So to fill up the tank,
you're right,
it was $85.
I know if you were listening to my station, we give gas prices.
Sure.
And I could tell you.
On the nines. Gas prices on the nines.
I don't know what the difference is in price.
It was around 50 cents, 60 cents a gallon, and it fluctuates. There's some places where it's 40 cents more per gallon, but think about how quickly that adds up.
I know it's 80 cents for a piece of cheese, for a cheeseburger at some of the places.
Don't put that in your gas tank. That'll mess your engine up.
How can they go 80 cents for a piece of cheese?
Oh, in it, like a hamburger place? Yeah, some places will do that.
80 cents.
I know.
It's just a Kraft single.
I know. You know that, and I know that.
I bring my own. I have a little refrigerated section of my glove compartment.
Hold the cheese.
And I bring, I leave some Kraft singles in there, although I enjoy a good Kraft single. They make a good grilled cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the preservatives in it. You probably don't. You don't need to refrigerate them, do you?
Yeah, I think you probably should. I would imagine.
All right,
not a bad idea.
Refrigerated glove box.
Applaud you for bringing your own cheese.
Save lots of money.
You should sell. You should stand next to the counter when people are ordering and go, "Look, I know what they're charging.
Care for a slice?
I've got some for half the price of what they're charging.
I would just give it for free.
Oh, you would? Wow.
Yep.
Friendly.
I like to help people.
Very
that
friendly.
Way.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news, and then there's more show coming your way. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I'm just going to say it. I'm not going to hold back. I'm just going to say it. I feel bad for Angelina Jolie and for Brad Pitt and for all their kids. Don't you kind of a little bit?
Have they been? I don't like to see anyone get divorced.
No, me neither.
I mean, unless they can't live with each other and then they're staying together for the kids' sake, that's bad too.
Right.
if they're in a toxic relationship and not providing a good environment for their kids, maybe they should separate.
And that's what she's saying. She's saying that she was questioning his parenting skills.
Yeah, but how so? I'm just so curious to know
not
specifically.
They're not saying.
She seems like the one calling the shots, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
So what does he have to do? Like,
no doubt about it.
Let him have a Happy Meal? And maybe she was mad at that?
I don't know. They're not saying. Six children. I know that part.
Wow.
Here's the story out of CNN. One of Hollywood's highest profile marriages is over. Angelina Jolie has filed for divorce from her husband, Brad Pitt. A source familiar with the filing confirmed to CNN. Already there is speculation that a tabloid-friendly, child-unfriendly custody battle may ensue over their six children. But a source close to them asserted that both sides want a cordial breakup. They seemed happy for the most part, didn't they?
What did we know, Bill? They put on the public face of happiness.
But doesn't it say, I'm certainly not the first person to say this, that no matter how much money you have, how much fame you have, it just sometimes it just doesn't matter.
I agree.
I mean, they could afford anything they want. They could go anywhere they want.
Can't
they
buy
could
happiness.
Do anything. Can't buy happiness.
And they
happiness.
Went through a lot together. I mean, her with all of her surgeries.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yeah.
She had a double mastectomy.
Double mastectomy.
Self-imposed.
Yeah. Didn't she have her eggs or ovaries removed, too, because of the BRCA gene or something?
Is that true?
I think so.
Yeah. Other than the fame of the people involved, this is like so many divorces, the source said, the same source that tipped CNN off to their divorce.
I want to know who the source is. Aren't you dying to know?
It doesn't say. The divorce filing may tell a very different story, though. Pitt and Jolie got married in 2014.
That's it?
Yeah, because remember their thing was always, they would say, if everyone can't get married, meaning same-sex relationships, then we don't want to get married. But then once that door was open, they said, okay, now it's time to get married. Their relationship began back in 2004 when they co-starred in the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith. At the time, Pitt was married to actress Jennifer Aniston.
That broke my heart.
That divorce did.
Yeah, they
were so sad.
Yeah.
A perfect couple. They were both beautiful.
Yeah. Well, but I know you're not a fan of Angelina Jolie is pretty, but she is. Wendy, she is.
I don't think she's unattractive, but she has a unique exotic look to her. I'm not saying she's unattractive, but we were talking about this off the air with Steve Cochran. Like, when you talk about a natural beauty, I think of Grace Kelly or Natalie Wood.
Yeah.
Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah.
These are just beautiful people.
You don't see that with her, though?
No, she's unique looking and exotic looking. I think, you know, sexy and beautiful are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has beauty in their own way.
She also has a very powerful look to her, doesn't she? She's no slouch. Like, when she stands or walks around, she's got this look. Although, if you'll remember the incident at the Academy Awards where she stood
and
in
made
a
out
very
with
strange,
her brother?
No, that was years earlier, her brother Jamie. That was years earlier. About 4 or 5 years ago, she was on stage, and I think it was to announce the nominees for some category, and she stood in a very strange model-like pose that then there were some writers who were up later. They won a screenwriting award, and they also stood in the same pose to make fun of her.
I remember that.
It's very funny. In April of 2005, photos surfaced of Pitt, Jolie, and her adopted son Maddox in Kenya. Jolie later adopted daughter Zahara from Ethiopia in early 2006. She announced that she and Pitt were then expecting a baby. Shortly thereafter, Pitt was granted the right to legally adopt Maddox and Zahara. Their daughter Shiloh was born in 2006. Their son Pax was adopted from Vietnam. It's like the UN at their house.
I know.
There's kids from every nation.
Which is kind of cool and kind of great.
Right.
These kids have what we thought was a great home, a great happy home.
Only vacation at Epcot Center, Wendy. That was the only place they felt comfortable. Jolie gave birth to twins, Vivienne and Knox,
in July
2008. Do they only have six kids? I know I've mentioned at least a dozen kids in the last few paragraphs. Is it only six? The couple announced their engagement in 2012. Pitt was there to support Jolie in 2013 when she underwent a preventive double mastectomy. Jolie said at the time that she underwent the surgery following the discovery that she carried a mutation of BRCA1 gene, which greatly increased her risk for cancer. That was very controversial.
I remember that.
I think very brave, don't you?
It is, but some people would say useless too because it doesn't always materialize.
Well, she said she talked about the odds about that. My doctors said that they estimated that I had an 87% risk of breast cancer and a 50% risk of ovarian cancer, although the risk is different in the case of each woman. She wrote in an article she did for the New York Times, once I knew that this was my reality, I decided to be proactive. Sorry, big difference. And to minimize the risk as much as I could, I made a decision to have a preventive double mastectomy. That for any woman, I can't even imagine what that must be like, but especially for somebody whose job almost depends on a certain look, you say to yourself, I said at the time, good for you, health first, career second, you know?
Yeah, but they do the breast augmentation very soon thereafter,
right.
So she got a new pair.
Right.
I don't know if I'd say brave. I would say, you know, she made a decision she felt was right for her.
Right, right. In 2014, they were married in a small private ceremony in a chapel at Chateau Merival in the village of Corinth.
Were you married there?
That's where Kevin's getting married on Friday.
Okay. I knew someone was.
I should not give that out, Kevin. Sorry. The following year, Jolie once again made headlines for her health when she had her ovaries and fallopian tubes removed to, again, guard against cancer. She really has a history of this. The couple talked to NBC's Tom Brokaw in 2015 about their marriage, her health struggles, and working together as they promoted their film By the Sea, which was poorly received. I didn't see it.
I feel bad they've been together so long and through so much and have only been married for 2 years and now it's done.
Right. But, I don't know them. I've never met either of them. But don't you just go, that's so sad because so many people, you look at that couple and you say to yourself, those guys kind of have everything. And even when you have what's perceived to be everything, it doesn't guarantee you a lifetime together.
I wasn't a fan of them together.
No?
I liked him better with,
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. And it's like, it's my decision to decide who he gets to be with.
And I think she just needs more of a bad boy.
Do you really?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who would you fix her up?
Like Billy Bob. When that was a good match.
Remember she had a vial of his blood around her neck?
Yeah. That was strange.
That was her strange time.
I wonder
But he's a bad parent? I don't know.
Oh, right.
There are two sides to every story.
Well, she didn't have the kids when she was with Billy Bob Thornton. She was by herself back then. But now she's got a bunch of kids, which will make finding a date very difficult for her. I'm sure she'll have a very hard time finding anybody. Who would you fix her up with, Kim? If you're saying get her another bad boy, who would that be?
Oh, boy.
I'm trying to think of who's available. John Mayer is always on call.
Yeah.
Always on call.
I don't see them together.
He's a little weaselly, though.
Yeah, all right. He's off the
list.
And
he's busy touring with the Dead.
Eddie Munster just got married a week ago. That's unfortunate because that would have been a great matchup.
Yeah, really?
Do they both have widow's peaks?
Yes.
Angelina has a little
yes.
widow's peak.
They had that in common. They could talk about that for the first date.
Who is a good bad boy out there right now?
I'm trying to think of who's available. Only from the acting world or otherwise?
Well, no, we can expand our horizons.
Who's that guy who messed up? Is it Jesse? What's the guy who was...
Jesse James.
Jesse
Sandra
James.
Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yeah. He is a bad boy.
He is a bad
Whatever happened to him?
I don't know. I think everybody on the planet at one time got sick of him. Like, everybody just went, all right, enough with this guy.
Well, yeah. And Sandra Bullock is like Jennifer Aniston, like America's sweetheart. You don't mess with her.
Exactly.
Right.
Hey, Fran, you have some information on the Brangelina split, which I'm glad people won't say anymore.
Hi. I was at a doctor's office where I'm at frequently and look at different magazines, people and that. And whether it's true or not, there was about Angelina and Brad that said, she gives the kids free rein. Whatever they want to do, they can do. They don't want to go to school, they don't have to go to school. They want to do this, they can do that. I mean, it sounded like really horrible with six kids. I had six kids. Honest to God, if you can't keep them in order,
right.
You know, your life is chaotic. And I can't imagine. Maybe he kind of got tired of that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they probably had conflicts over that.
Well, that's what's weird is if what you're saying is true and she's the one letting the kids just run amok, she's questioning his parenting skills. That's why she said she's filing for divorce.
Well, and that could be because they must have conflicts about this. I'm sure he probably wasn't raised that way.
Right.
And if it is true, and of course, who knows what's in the magazines, if it is or it isn't. I don't take it as gospel, but I just was wondering. I thought, well, that's really kind of odd. You know, all these kids get to do whatever they want. They want to eat, fine. If they don't, fine. If they want to go to school, fine. If they don't, they don't have to. They can do just whatever they choose to. They're the free spirits.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
That seems so like her, though, doesn't it? I mean, she's a free spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. But I think after a while, when the kids start getting older, that can become very much of a conflict. Because kids need structure or whatever, at least to a certain point.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea how these children are. They could be very well behaved and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you grow up doing everything and anything you want in this world, it doesn't work when you get to be an adult.
No, it's so true.
Although it probably will for them because they have all the money in the world.
I was just going to say, unless you're a super millionaire or something, you know, then you can do that. But otherwise, that just seems kind of odd to me.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And again, whether it's totally true or not, but it was in one of the reputable magazines. You know, it was an Inquirer or something like that. Because they usually just grab a people, and I thought, well, gee whiz, that's kind of odd. But it kind of suited her, I guess. So I thought that was strange.
It is
Fran,
strange.
It sounds like you're like me. I go to doctor's offices that aren't even my doctor's just so I can catch up on the latest magazines.
That's the only time I ever get to read them.
I know. Fran, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Quick break, and I think Cindy might have the perfect match.
Oh, yeah?
For Angelina Jolie.
All right, that's what's ahead. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we were talking about Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. They're splitting up. She is the one filing for divorce.
Yeah, she said that she's not happy with his, Brad Pitt's, parenting skills. And enough is enough. Handsomest man in the world, out you go.
He is pretty handsome.
Yeah.
And still looking very good. Yeah. We were thinking of a good bad boy for Angelina.
Kim Gordon says she needs a bad boy, that the good
bad
boy.
Bad boy.
You've been a bad boy. Lou Costello was a bad boy. That would have been a nice matchup.
Cindy, you have an idea. A bunch of people have texted the same name, and I think it's a perfect fit.
Oh, I think that this guy is, he's good looking, too. And he's got a lot of money, so you don't have to worry about that. But I think Johnny Depp would be a great bad boy for her.
That's an interesting
pairing. And he just
pairing.
Split up.
I like that one.
Amber
that's
Heard.
A good yeah. one, yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
And he just got a divorce, so he needs someone to love.
How do we fix them up?
There's a rumor that they're dating and they'll get fixed up.
All right, let's try that. That's a great idea. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate it.
All right, and do we want to talk to... Carol, before we get out
sure.
of here. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm calling in because I had a double mastectomy myself, and I felt like maybe you might have minimalized the process because it's very painful, and it's a very tough recovery. They put in tissue expanders, and then you have to go in every week for them to put in fluid so that you slowly expand. And it's a series of weeks, and every week when you do it, it's very painful because it's more weight. And then you have to go in and have another surgery and have those taken out and then put the implants in, and then you have to go back. It's a series of surgeries, and it's very painful and long, and it's not something where you just get a new pair.
Exactly. And plus, she didn't go through the tragedy of having cancer where that messes with you physically and emotionally.
Right, and you're always left with the feeling that they're not your own.
Oh.
You know, and that's a huge loss.
Yeah.
And even though you may get new ones, and maybe they're better or not, but they're not your own. And it's a huge loss. And
right.
I just thought that needed to be said.
How are you doing, Carol? Are you doing okay?
Well, I had a second bout five years ago, and just had radiation, and I seem to be doing very well. I should be going off the tamoxifen soon. And so far, so good.
Good. That's
we'll keep
much
our fingers
news.
Crossed for you, Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. You.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
One of our previous callers talked about their kids. They have six kids between them, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. And we were all kind of saying that they're in a situation where you're rich and you're famous, and there's good in that and there's bad in that. There was a documentary about 10 years ago called Born Rich. I don't know if you've ever seen
no.
this. It's kids actually, the study took place when they were in their teens and into their early 20s. I think the youngest one was probably 14 or 15, and then the oldest was in their early 20s, including Ivanka Trump, by the way, was in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it really chronicled what their lives are like when you are insanely rich. And when it was over, I saw it with my wife, and then I had other friends who saw it. Your feeling is almost pity for them, and you say, how could you pity somebody who's got hundreds of millions or billions of dollars and can have whatever they want whenever they want? But the motivation and the drive that most of us have to just succeed just almost didn't exist for these people. And again, you think it's impossible to feel sorry for somebody that wealthy, but you do, because they didn't seem happy. I would say, I think they focused on about 12 or 14 really rich kids. Only one or two of them seemed even remotely happy.
Well, you know, when you want something so badly and you have to wait for it, you hate to wait. It sucks to wait. But when you get it, you are so rewarded and happy about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
There's no waiting process if you have all the money in the world.
Right.
You
go
want something,
it.
You go get it.
Yeah.
And
their lives were, it was just this side of empty. Like, they had stuff to do, but it wasn't ever anything important. It was just meeting other people in their group, you know, other really rich people, and it was awful. You felt so sorry for them.
I mean, you know, they say money can't buy happiness. Money can help ease your stress. Like, if you know where the mortgage payment is coming for the next
sure.
month, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
That does buy you happiness,
yeah.
in my opinion. But too much, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a weird fall off after a certain level, and the movie really chronicled it. If you can find it, I don't remember what TV network was showing it. It's about 10 years old. It's called Born Rich.
Born Rich.
And it's a lot of names. Like, once you know the last names, you can kind of put together, like, Georgina Bloomberg was one of them. So Bloomberg is an investment for, you know, so there's that. Ivanka Trump is kind of the only one that was really famous. I don't remember if Paris Hilton was in this. I don't think she was.
Where's she been lately?
She still shows up every once in a while and stuff. Not as prominent as a couple of years ago. We need to take a break. News is next, and then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has also coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch soon. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thank you. We're trying to figure out if Jay Cutler's thumb is injured, how he's going to make those thumbprint cookies at Christmas time. This is going to ruin everything.
It's tough.
It is going to be. It's going to be near impossible.
You're talking to a Packer fan, not me, of course, Kim Gordon.
Oh, Kim already brought forms in for me to sign.
I know you're really ready.
I'm looking for a new NFL
team. And you know
team.
What? You can drive with us to Green Bay on Sunday.
It's an
I've
easy drive.
I've got room in my car.
I'll come
How long
with
a ride
you.
Is that?
It's about 3 hours.
That's too long.
No, it isn't.
This is the same 3-hour interval that the Bears play what would be a football game every Sunday.
Exactly.
All right, I know you're done.
Miserable.
I know I'm finished watching.
Are
you
done too?
My husband is. Yeah, because he's the one who would have it on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make enough. He said, you know, if he's not doing anything, he might look at it.
Much like the Bears.
But you've become much more hateful than everyone else. I can't go to the Pack. I'm sorry.
Think about this,
though. I'm not switching teams. I'm just not watching the games.
You're just avoiding football at all costs. Think about what it must be like for Kim or other Green Bay Packers fans to, on almost any Sunday, have the victory, thrilling anticipation, both before, during, and after a game of what the Packers or a winning football team brings. I know they had a rough night the other night against Minnesota.
Yeah, but your loss last night kind of helped ease the blow of
I
my
bet it did.
Loss Sunday.
I'm sure it did. How could it not? I don't think Jay Cutler's being in the lineup doesn't make a difference to the Bears winning or losing. It just doesn't. It should. Any other NFL team, you go, our starting quarterback is down. Uh-oh. Not in this case.
Do you think the Cubs curse has been switched to Soldier
yes.
Field?
The yes. Cubs aren't finished with it yet, so careful, Cubs fans.
Oh, no.
I know, but don't curse.
Don't say
I'm
that.
I'm not cursing anybody.
Don't say that.
I'm not
Bill,
saying...
you've stuck with the Cubs for so long. I mean, the Bears are, you know, they're in a rebuilding year, too.
When the Cubs were at their worst a couple of years ago, and that would be the season that they went 61 and 101, I watched or listened to maybe a half a dozen games all year long. They were intolerable. They are what the Bears are now. It's just there's no joy in Mudville.
It is painful.
It's
awful.
I mean,
it's so hard to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
We're in the process of working on getting someone. I don't know if it's going to happen, but there's a Bears super fan who...
Oh, I know who that guy is. You just showed me the picture of a guy who He keeps having bears' names tattooed on his body.
And he saved, he's running out of space, but he has saved room for Chicago Bears quarterback Jay Cutler. We have to talk to him today and see if he still wants it.
All right. Might want to put that on his right thumb.
Would that be perfect?
Because seriously,
there was a time, if the Bears had a decent quarterback, you'd see Chicagoans donating their thumb, going, hey, take my thumb. If that's good for the team, you can have my thumb. Not with Jay Cutler.
Did you ever see the movie Lawnmower Man?
Yes, with Jeff Fahey.
Yeah, and he gets somebody else's arm, yeah, and it does bad things.
Right.
What if Jay Cutler got a thumb that worked?
Wouldn't that be something?
It could happen.
There's your storybook finish. Somebody does a thumb transplant. Remember the movie Face Off with John Travolta,
yes,
and Nicolas Cage? So the movie's Thumb Off. So they switch Jay Cutler's thumb with Aaron Rodgers' thumb or any of your other premium NFL quarterbacks' thumbs, and that's what makes the difference.
Peyton Manning isn't using his anymore.
Not anymore. He's just got pizza franchises. He doesn't need a thumb to run pizza franchises.
Oh, he does have Papa John's, right?
Yeah, a bunch of them. Yep.
In Colorado.
Yep.
Where a lot of people smoke weed and order lots of pizzas. That is perfect.
That's perfect.
He's,
yeah,
a good businessman.
What would be better than that? What would be better than that? Can I just wrap up some quick unfinished business, mostly from last week? On Friday's show, we were talking about a night that meant a lot to me in my childhood, and that was the night that the networks would show you a preview of their various cartoon lineups, their Saturday morning cartoon lineups, and all my friends would come over, and it was, to us, it was like the Academy Awards or the Super Bowl. It was one of the biggest nights of the year. We would all get so excited to see these new cartoon previews on Saturday. And a bunch of people called up with the cartoons that they loved the most as a kid. What happened to this cartoon? What happened to that cartoon? I think we played the Funky Phantom theme. And a listener named Trish called and was talking about the Groovy Ghoulies. And I mentioned that I have, because I collect toys and action figures, I have all the Groovy Ghoulie. They made these little figures for them in the early 1970s. And I promised that I would post a picture of that for my collection. I've brought the picture in. Kevin, is it on Facebook yet, or can we get it up fairly soon? We can get it up soon. All right, so it'll be on there soon.
You know, when she did call and you said, I'm going to do something great for you, I thought you were going to give her a figure.
Oh, no.
Take a picture of one and post it.
They're extremely valuable. I mean, it's ridiculous, because when they came out in the early 70s, I think they were 39 or 49 cents each, and now some of them, there's 9 in the set. Some of them are between the $70 and $80 range for these little figures that were 39 cents a couple decades ago.
Can I tell you, you always talk about, you know, women, how we write down, or we, when we have purchased something, we say not how much the item was, but how much we saved.
Yes.
You always talk about your toys that way, how much they've appreciated, but you will never sell them. Does it matter?
It's good for my kids, because when I die, and sometimes even when I'm sick, I see them start to wrap stuff. I'll see them on eBay. What are you guys doing? Nothing. But they will quickly go, oh, what size box would that fit in? I wonder if we had to send that out to another part of the country, I wonder what kind of box we'd put that in. So it's great news for them. I will never sell. I mean, I wouldn't. When I was out of work once between jobs, I had to sell some of the toys. And that if you ordered a toy from me, it came with a bag of tears because I'd be weeping. I don't want to sell this stuff.
Can I give an update to something?
Sure.
Corey Feldman is going to be, or is live right now on The Talk on CBS to talk about his Today Show performance. And I believe he's been invited back to the Today Show.
Oh, he has?
Because he felt bullied and was sad.
Yeah, he mentioned yesterday he's not leaving his bed because of his Today Show performance on Friday.
Unless he gets asked back to the Today Show.
Then he'll find a way.
Another text that, Kim is gone. It says, I am appalled. How could WGN allow a Green Bay Packers fan to work there?
I think what's starting to happen is, even though Kim is brave enough to talk about it, I think you're seeing more and more Chicagoans looking elsewhere for their NFL fulfillment.
Do you really?
I mean?
I don't feel like they're looking elsewhere. I think they've just put the season on hold, along with last season and probably next season.
That's a long time.
What are you going to do?
Isn't that a long time?
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. And then a quick follow-up to one other thing, although we don't have time here. Let's take a quick break,
right,
and then there's one other little bit of unfinished business from last week that we can finish up for you. And then a big full long show, so stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, we're just picking up a couple of loose ends from last week's shows. Yesterday, there was a lot going on during most of our show with the bombing in New York and New Jersey, so we didn't really finish up on some of these. As Wendy already told you, Corey Feldman is out of bed, so thankfully that problem is taking care of itself. There is a picture of my Groovy Ghoulies collection of figures. It's either on Facebook now or it will be soon. Is it on, Kevin? It is. We're working on it? Okay. And then the other thing is this. We had on Mike Leonard from NBC. He was a correspondent at NBC for 30-plus years. Very, very nice man. While here talking about his career and a new show that he has coming out next year, we talked about the fact that Mike has in his yard, he has built a miniature wiffle ball stadium, not just a place to play wiffle ball, but an actual stadium with a working scoreboard and an automatic umpire. And
are there bleachers? Sponsor.
There's no bleachers. That's because you'd have to build those like on your neighbor's lawns.
Yeah.
And there'd probably be some flack about that.
Yeah, that's true. And but, this is his front yard.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's like Field of Dreams for wiffle ball. It's stunning. So he was nice enough to invite me to come and play, mostly because I begged him and begged him and begged him, and he gave in to that.
He wanted to make you stop. That's why he invited you.
He's had some pretty big names come. Like Bob Costas found out about this, and Bob Costas goes, I got to see this. So Bob Costas has flown out 3 times to come and play at this wiffle ball stadium on a Sunday. Larry Potash from the WGN-TV Morning News has been out there. There's been a couple of other names.
Bill Leff.
And now me. And I went out on Sunday, and it was everything I hoped it would be and more. It was so cool to see grown men. Mike's in his 60s. Most of the guys playing range from their 20s to their 70s. Mike's brother is 70 or 71 years old. But they had the same kind of passion that we all had as kids when we would play Little League or Rubber Coated or softball or whatever. They were that into it. They keep score. They keep stats. Like, they know what everybody's batting, and they're pitching ERAs.
Me. The sweetest thing to me is how he started this, because he said there weren't a lot of kids for his son to play with, so he put this field together so he and his son could play wiffle ball, and now he uses it as an excuse. I think he said for the past 15 years, his son and friends come and play every Sunday.
His whole family was there. He's got 4 kids, so they were all there, and their husbands and wives. And it was like a Chicago version of the Kennedys with the touch football.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. And they take it very seriously. There was a ball that a wiffle ball that bounced out in the infield, and the pitcher came and ran and scooped it up on the line, and they debated for about 10 minutes as to whether or not that'd be considered a fair ball or a foul ball. They said, you know, what I said, what do you do when there's a call this close? And they said, we send it to New York, and they decide in New York whether it's fair or foul. So there was that.
How fast were the pitches going?
They pitch very fast.
I asked him here. He said that a couple of times two women played, and people had a problem with it.
Yeah.
Even though it was like one of the best all-star pitchers of some college or softball team, because, you know, they wanted to go underhand. And I said, what do you mean? You go over? He's like, oh, it's fast pitch. It's fast pitch.
It's very fast pitch. And unlike, you know, if you play on a regular baseball field, there's some distance between the pitcher's mound and the batter's box. In this, I think it's 14 feet or 15 feet. So you get like a split second to decide if I'm swinging or not. In batting practice, I hit 5 home runs, and they were in awe, because that's hard to do. One home run is hard. In batting practice, I hit 5 home runs.
Holy moly.
In the actual game, I went 0 for 5. I struck out twice and grounded out 3 times. After that,
practice does not make perfect in your case.
The only time during the game that I hit an actual home run is Mike said it was my last at bat, and he goes, I'm just going to get a picture of you swinging, so this won't count. And I go, that's cool. And then they pitched it, and I hit a home run. And that's the one that didn't count. But the thing I needed to tell you is this. On a couple of shows, we've talked about both you and neither of us are thieves. We don't steal things.
No.
But we've said, let's say you were allowed to steal something. What would you steal? And I said, without a doubt, I would steal one of those big boy statues at big boy restaurants, and I'd put it in my yard. That's something I've always wanted, is a giant 10-foot-high big boy statue. In Mike's backyard is a giant 10-foot-tall big boy statue. He's got one in his yard, and it's beautifully landscaped.
Yeah.
Go back at night under the cover of
Oh,
darkness.
My God, Steve. I said to him, if it's ever missing, it's because I stole it. I will steal this.
Can't
if
he
given
tell
a
you
chance.
Where to get one? Somebody has one, Bill. Well, you're just going to have to pay for it. They're not going to give it to you.
There's, if you, I know this is the weirdest thing in the world to Google. Actually,
I'm
the more I think about
metal finials. What's weirder than that?
There is somewhere the people who own the Big Boy franchise, and depending on what state you're in, it could be Frisch's Big Boy, Shoney's Big Boy, Mark's Big Boy. There's like 8 different Big Boy distributors around the country. They have this, they call it the Big Boy Graveyard. And what it is all the statues that have become obsolete, they bring them there. So when you look at it, there's like 50 of them just kind of littered about in this giant, like junkyard, essentially, but all that's there is Big Boy statues.
Although I did find on eBay, there's a 40-inch one.
That's
so
not
that's
bad.
That's 3.5 feet,
yeah.
$550.
See, now I want, that would be great.
Wait, let me show you the picture.
I know beggars can't be choosers, but if I'm going to do one and have my wife not talk to me for any length of time.
Go big or go home.
I would do the full size, like the 10-footer. There is a picture of myself and Mike Leonard and Big Boy, the statue of Big Boy, in his backyard. And you can see I have a shifty look on my face. Like, if he doesn't look, I'm going to take this.
Although you can't just carry it out. It's 10 feet.
No, you would need, I would have needed everybody who played baseball that day to help me out with this. But it's not, I can't, I'm not, he's my friend. I wouldn't steal from a friend. If I didn't like him, I would steal.
You haven't known him that long.
Right. I imagine as our relationship grows, I'll eventually want to steal it.
I got to go on our Facebook page right now. Forgive me.
It's just so cool to see one of the things I've always wanted. And his wife, I talked to his wife, who's like the nicest woman in the world. I said, you allow this? She goes, he loves it. There's no way in the world Terry would let me do that.
Yeah, she would if you found it and it wasn't that much money.
We've talked about it. I've suggested it. She threatened my life. She goes, if you put that in our yard, do I have to tell you the rest? It's not pretty.
Put it in your bedroom then. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
There's already a Big Boy in our bedroom, Wendy.
Oh, stop it. The Groovy Ghoulies are on our Facebook page. The pictures of the wiffle ball, those pictures aren't up yet?
I think only the picture of us with the Big Boy are up
there
now.
No, that's not up there.
Oh, it's not
either.
Up yet? Okay. All right. Before the day is out.
Okay.
All right.
Kevin's last day is tomorrow. He doesn't really care about us anymore.
You know.
What?
It's true.
As an added bonus for tomorrow being Kevin's last day, tomorrow on the show, at the end of the show at 2:30, Kevin's fiance Sarah will be on the show, and her father Ahmet will also be on the show. And our goal is to see how much she and her dad really know about Kevin. So we'll do that in the last half hour tomorrow before we say goodbye to Kevin for his wedding.
We have a couple of texters, Bill, saying, I can get you one. I did 2 remodeling projects, installing them in man caves, the Big Boys. So you should take these numbers
down. I will write them down.
All right. 312.
But you know.
No, that's not the
you
number.
You do know Terry would kill. She would kill me. I would be dead.
No, she wouldn't.
She says she would. It's not even gray. She said point blank, if you ever get one of those, I'm going to kill you.
She can't. You collect toys. That would be perfect to put right in your yard.
But this isn't even a toy. This is a monument.
Of your love.
My stupidity.
I mean, this is what you do.
I know. But even I know. Even I mean, this is beyond frivolous to get something like that.
But it's
meaningful.
It's
10 feet tall.
So what? Seriously, she has to let you do it.
My neighbors already look at me like I'm not done.
You know what I mean?
I get that look from the neighbors like, he's not quite ready yet. This would tip it in.
You should, if it's available and you have the opportunity to get it,
yeah,
she'll let you have it.
Do you remember the thing with the Slurpee machine years ago? I'd always wanted a Slurpee machine, and then I was talking about it on the air, and these guys called up, and they said, we've got one, and it's in perfect working order. You don't even have to pay for it. It's yours. Take the Slurpee machine. Do you know how quickly into that sentence she said no? I said, Tara, there's... And she goes, no.
It's half your house, isn't it? You have to get that in your yard. It's up on Facebook. Go there right now. Bill Leff and Wendy's.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Well, it's not beautiful, but it has a lot of meaning to you.
It's like, it's just pop culture, just like, right there for the asking.
She has picked out colors and drapery and furniture. You get to pick out a lawn ornament.
Can you be in on the negotiations?
I promise I will help. If Jim wanted to get some kind of Death Star thing,
you would let him do something that big?
Yeah, if it was just sort of in the back where it couldn't be seen from the front. Yeah, why not?
You don't have to convince me, but I'm telling you,
this is all about you, Bill. It's sad, but it's true.
You know what's funny is like that needs to be because it's out in the lawn, so like moss and dust and stuff kind of accumulate on it because it's outside, and they don't do what I would do, which is wax it and polish it every day. So they felt guilty that they were showing it to me because it looked like he had razor stubble. He had like black, like.
That's part of the charm is that it's weathered.
I'm with you.
So you can't be polishing it. I'm supposed to help you get this thing. You're hurting yourself.
I know.
Oh. Looks like he has a goatee. Is that moss?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's moss. He's not a hipster, big boy. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Yeah,
and
plaid overalls. Right.
He looks great. We'll take a break. Steve with the news and then more show, including what Donald Trump Jr. said and the aftermath. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. Stick around, Steve. Something that got a mention during the Wintrust business lunch and that we were all talking about even prior to the show. Yesterday, Donald Trump Jr., I don't think I even have to say this, but the son of Donald Trump, could that be more obvious? made a speech last night, in which he referenced Skittles in a very peculiar way. Rex Hubke joins us, a fine columnist for the Chicago Tribune, because he is somehow involved in this. Rex, I don't know if you're even aware of this, but you're getting a lot of press nationally. Fortune.com mentioned some of the tweets that put this into the best perspective, and you were among them. Did you know that?
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we just saw that over the lunch break. So congrats on that. Tell the story in your own words about Donald Trump Jr. and his strange analogy to Skittles yesterday.
Yeah, he tweeted out a picture of a bowl of Skittles, and there's a lot of delicious details that I can follow up with after the general story, but basically it's a bowl of Skittles. And his comment was effectively that this was sort of a metaphor for the Syrian refugee situation. And he said, if there were three Skittles in this bowl that would kill you, would you still take a handful? And that is the problem we face with the Syrian refugees.
Yeah.
So that operates on so many despicable levels, it's almost hard to categorize them all. Number one being that the refugees that are leaving a war-torn country are not candy.
Right.
Which actually wound up being the response from Skittles itself, and the company that produces Skittles, the defamed candy in this case. And, okay, so refugees aren't candy, A. B, it's an utterly ridiculous comparison to make. I mean, first of all, the Syrian refugees that we do take, which it's not very many in the grand scheme of things, are the most thoroughly vetted of any immigrants that come into this country. So again, the whole premise here is kind of ridiculous. But tossing all that aside, what that internet meme that he's basically mimicking is an old one that's been around for a long time, and it was circulated through a lot of white supremacist circles. It used to involve a bowl of M&Ms, and it was changed to Skittles after Trayvon Martin was killed. And because Trayvon Martin, if you remember, was buying Skittles prior to the incident
right. In
which he died. So the white supremacist gang switched the meme over to Skittles instead of M&Ms because, haha, that's funny. So anyway, the whole thing is just...
God, that's even worse than I thought. I didn't know all the backstory. Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, and unfortunately, Donald Trump Jr. Has routinely been on Twitter, spreading and retweeting all manner of these kind of alt-right white supremacist concepts and memes and sometimes images and all these kinds of things that are literally born, and it's easily traceable. I mean, anybody that has the internet can figure this out in about 5 seconds, but, it all stems from this sort of simmering pot of hatred on the far right. And it's pretty, I made a joke. I didn't really make a joke. I have made some jokes about it because the whole thing is so preposterous. But and I usually try to make jokes in general to draw attention to things. But in this case, it's really pretty sick, I think. I mean, it was a pretty twisted image on its surface. But even more importantly, the place that it came from is a rather hideous place.
And this is coming off the heels of Donald Trump Jr. making his gas chamber comments a few days ago.
Right, yeah. So, nice follow-up.
That hadn't even settled yet.
Yeah, and I also, this is also in the wake of the... I was at the Republican National Convention, and one of the big themes that came out of that was how great Trump's kids are. And, if his kids are this great, he must be a great guy. Well, I'd like to hear that line repeated a few times at the moment, because there's a lot of dodginess about this. And, you know,
although, I mean, who knows, Donald might be very proud of Donald Jr. for these particular tweets and quotes.
That is entirely possible. And you know, I understand it's a controversial issue and people have strong feelings about it. And there are legitimate security concerns when you're dealing with any kind of immigration. I get that, of course. But you know what? I mean, I don't know what it is that Forbes picked up on. One of the things I sent was a picture of some Syrian refugee children. And I said, you know what? Let's say they're Skittles. Yeah. If there's a risk involved here, I'm taking that risk, okay, to save these particular Skittles, because look at them. These are little kids. You know, there are women and kids and men, you know, also, I mean, there's a false belief that it's predominantly fighting age men. I think that's sort of the line that gets run around that are being brought into the country. That's not correct at all. But anyway, I mean, just the whole thing about, you know, our country is kind of founded on you know, being good,
right,
and open, and, right, and trying to help people, you know, people in need, because we are the strongest country and the wealthiest country and all this kind of thing. And so to not only to turn your back on people in that situation, but to dehumanize them and turn them into candy just is a bit of a step too far for me.
Agreed. I'll go on, Wendy.
No, I was just going to say, Rex, if you want, you can read your response to, and I'll do the exact one that Donald Jr., a picture of a bowl of Skittles. If I had a bowl of Skittles and I told you just three would kill you, would you take a handful? That's our Syrian refugee problem. Trump, Pence, make America great again. And then Donald Jr. says, this image says it all. Let's end the politically correct agenda that doesn't put America first. And then your response? Would you like to read it, Rex?
Actually, I don't have it right in front of me at the moment. I'm sorry. I sent like several responses. I was really mad about it.
Sure.
Well, this is the one where you have pictures of refugee kids that are all dressed in colorful clothing, looking like kids from everywhere. Even if we did bring in a few bad Skittles, and there's no evidence we do, you take that risk to save these Skittles, you monstrous dope.
Yeah. Like I said, I was a little mad at the time.
Well, it sparks reaction out of everyone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it went crazy. I mean, Twitter was, and all of social media yesterday was going bananas over this. And again, rightfully so. I mean, it's because it's more than just the image and just what he says. I mean, it's the history of it. It is what it represents. It's the callousness of it. All of these things come together. And the fact that we're talking about the son of a presidential candidate, you know, tweeting about refugees as if they're candy. It defies logic that we're at this state in our, I mean, literally, it cracked me up to a degree, because last night, and I think I tweeted something along these lines, but we were, the nation, everybody paying attention to this was kind of on the edge of their seat waiting for a candy company to respond to something that could, you know, that could have an impact on the presidential election. Because, again, this is a major gaffe, I would argue, certainly by the son of the candidate. And so, it was kind of up to Skittles. Like, what are they going to do now? And the absurdity of that is not lost on me. I mean, well, it's absolutely bizarre.
Rex, their words, and you mentioned most of it, but you left out the very end, which I think is a very important part of what the statement Mars made was. Their online statement was, as you mentioned, Skittles are candy, refugees are people. It's an inappropriate analogy. They then go on to say, we will respectfully refrain from further commentary, as anything we say could be misinterpreted as marketing. That's brilliant. That's just them saying, hey, this isn't us. We don't want to benefit. We don't want to benefit. We don't want to fail because of this. That's great.
Yeah, people far smarter than me in that realm were talking a lot about what an absolutely spot on response that was, because I understand a company doesn't want to take sides in an election. That's extremely risky for them to do, but at the same time they did have to respond, and I thought they responded in a very morally upright way by noting what we all should know, which is that refugees aren't candy, and then kind of slowly walking away and saying, okay, you guys fight over this, we're out, which I think was a smart moved by them. And
it just continues to dehumanize the situation and people, comparing them to Skittles. And also, if you have trouble with people from Arab nations, keep them out of our country until you know someone that is a friend of yours. And then all of a sudden, there's a human face on it. You know, everybody, it's easy to say, oh, just let's keep them out. Until you know someone, it's dehumanizing every part of the situation. And I hate it.
Yes. And if you go back through our history, this has happened repeatedly with different types of immigrants. I mean, it happened in World War II with Jewish immigrants, and there was reluctance to, you know, let German and other Jewish people from Europe come into the country. There was reluctance against Italian immigrants, Polish. I mean, it, you know, this has happened many times before. And then you turn around and you look at all the good these Skittles have done for our country.
Right.
I think you start to see things differently. I mean, of course there are security issues and there's risks, but we have a process in place for that. And, you know, we have other processes in place to try to keep us safe. And you know, I just think that you have to weigh all of these things. You can't just flatly say, no way, man, we're scared, we're not letting you in, you can die over there or whatever, not our problem.
This is a nation of immigrants. Unless you're Native American, sorry, but you're an immigrant.
Yep.
Your family came over from somewhere else. And a rip on candy so soon after Gene Wilder's death, Willy Wonka, Rex, that's inexcusable. You don't do that.
Have you no dignity, sir?
None. Yeah. None whatsoever.
And now Joe Walsh, a former Republican state representative for Illinois, took ownership of this idea and said this is his original idea that he came up with the Skittles.
He wants credit for this.
Yeah. No, why would you want credit for this?
I know. Well, you know.
Other than to say I thought of it first.
Right.
I was mean first.
There's another, somebody traced it, I believe it was in The Intercept, there. I saw something online just a little bit ago before we got on the line here, and actually they kind of traced the whole, this general concept of the Skittles thing back to a Nazi propagandist who used mushrooms. He compared certain types of mushrooms and used it to talk about how, you know, Jewish people are like a bad mushroom, and if you get one, you die, and it could destroy a whole society, and blah, blah, blah. And that was actually kind of the trace of the very origin of that meme. And that particular person was hung after the Nuremberg trials. So, again,
where's the progress we're supposed to be making?
Right.
Instead, we're going backwards.
Yeah. I mean, some of this stuff, you know, you see this stuff and it's outrageous and it seems vaguely familiar. Well, I think some of it's familiar because some of it's happened before. And I think that's where we really need to be cautious because, you know, we start going down roads that are not good. And again, I don't discount there is a side to this that is concerned, and I understand that, and I respect that, but I just think that we have to look at things in the broad historical picture, and we have to think about who we are as a country before we start just sort of infantilizing these concepts down into a bowl of candy.
Absolutely.
Rex Hupke for president. You get my vote.
No, thank you.
No. He refuses your vote, Wendy. Rex, great to talk to you. We appreciate your insight on this. A very strange story, but you encapsulated it beautifully. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate it. Good
thanks.
Luck.
Absolutely. That's right. Rex Hupke, fine writer for your Chicago Tribune. We'll take a little break and then be right back. Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're easy to reach during the show at 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there.
I don't know where to begin because there's a lot of support for Donald Jr. A lot of support.
Yeah.
815 says, like a sack of potatoes, you pick out the bad ones and try to salvage the rest. That's true. You know, the way they have changed strawberries now, where they're in these plastic containers, you look at it, it looks like a wonderful container of strawberries, but in the center, there's a moldy one. You throw that one out and you salvage the rest. There's good and bad all over the place.
Yeah, but
one bad apple does not spoil the whole bunch, girls.
Osmond's 1971.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't care what they say. I don't care
what they do now.
Right.
I just don't know. Some people agree.
But you knew that was going to be the case, right?
Somebody just wants the whole bowl of Skittles to eat.
Oh, well, that I agree with that. I don't know who that person is, but I'm on their side.
I agree with Trump Jr. Keep him out of here. I don't know what to say either.
If that was the policy that the country had from day one, if you're not from this country, you can't come into this country, none of us would be here.
I was just going to make a comparison, too, about how, you know,
white people came to this country and caused tons of violence, and here we are today. And
I do not like white people.
That's why you're going to take 10 days off for your wedding soon.
Longer than that, buddy.
Throw a grenade and run.
Right.
He's right, though. And then Rex Hubke, who we had on from the Tribune, someone says Rex is more upset about Skittles than 4,000 shot in Chicago. There is your progress. That's not what we're talking about.
There's plenty of reason to be upset about all the shootings in Chicago. It's a different argument. Like this argument, it's a very unfair argument and an awful argument. But, yeah, it's off topic just a little bit.
Wendy, go watch Star Wars since you live in a fantasy. Sad but true. A, I've seen it Star Wars as many times as I need to see it. Right. I don't need to watch it again. And I don't live in a fantasy. I live in the United States of America.
Right.
America. Right.
As some say, yeah.
Good God. I just, this is just...
But this is extremely representative of what's going on in the country right now, is that anytime Trump says something or anytime Hillary Clinton says something... A portion of the people are going to agree with no matter what they say. A portion are going to disagree with no matter what they say. And there's a very, very thin line in the middle who's trying to balance it and make sense of it all. And it's very hard to make sense of. It's very hard.
What happened to the golden rule? Treat others as you would like to be treated.
Gone.
Seriously, what
Gone.
Happened to that?
No longer in existence.
630, listen, we can't feed our own poor. We have military vets living on the street. We have our own problems.
We have those problems too, not instead of, but along with, don't we? There's room for plenty of problems.
773, it's a whole different world now. We didn't have terrorism before. Sorry, I think there's nothing wrong with what Trump Jr. said. Do I still live in America? The United States of America?
The United part is gone.
Is it 2016?
It is 2016.
Is it 2016 over yet?
Please let it be over.
It's time to start focusing on the next election.
We want a new... Right. Have they announced candidates for 2020 yet? Do we
all
know who...
depends on
all
what
right.
happens next month.
How about this? Cannot compare the immigrants of today with those who came before.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Really?
Come on. Look, I'm reading a book right now about a biography of Al Capone. And
yeah.
We have done this to every wave of immigrants
yes.
that has come into this country.
Yes.
It was the Irish, and then the Italians replaced
Chinese,
the Irish.
Polish.
Yes.
As being the quote-unquote deplorables. It is our story over and over again. We're just doing it now with Muslims, and the excuse is because very few of them commit very terrible crimes.
Right. I agree with you, Steve.
I think the final comment on this, 773, can put our mind at ease regarding which way you think. No such thing as a bad Skittle.
You can't argue with that. It's impossible to argue.
I like
even,
the grape ones.
Even the oranges that taste like aspirin, they're still
pretty
good.
I like the orange.
They're still pretty good. All right. Thank you for everybody for commenting, for texting, for calling. We appreciate it. Those of you who agree with us, those of you who don't agree with us, we do appreciate it.
We still appreciate it.
We do. All right. A break, some news from Steve, and then more show, including, I hope we have time for this, CBS has decided who did away with JonBenet Ramsey. Do you know that?
No.
The other day they did that special, and they said who did it, and we'll share that with
spoiler
you.
Spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert.
I want it spoiled. I've been waiting how many years for this?
It's been 20 years. So that's coming up in just a little while. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. Call in or text in at 312-981-7200. This is the 20th anniversary of the death, the unexplained death, of JonBenet Ramsey. So because of this, several networks have decided to devote a decent amount of programming to this in various forms.
We talked to somebody from the Investigative Discovery Channel,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like a National Enquirer version mm-hmm. of it.
Right.
And several other, there were I think like 3 to 5 specials on this.
There's a bunch, and there's still a couple more that haven't aired yet, but one of the highest touted ones was what went on CBS the other night. It was 2 nights. It was called The Case of JonBenet Ramsey. And what they said in the promos was they were going to get together the top investigators. They were going to do a mock-up version of the house. And we had Kurt Wagner on Friday. And I said, look, I'm obviously not an investigator, but I think your best bet is to not rebuild the house. Your best bet is to go to the house. I mean, it's been 20 years, so I don't know what the chances of that are. And John Ramsey wanted no part of this. He didn't want to be involved.
Can you blame him?
Nope. Nope. Although, I would certainly want closure. I wouldn't be sure if I'm him that CBS was doing this for closure. They were obviously doing it for ratings of some sort, right? So what they kind of promised was that at the conclusion of this, they would reveal all these investigators, all these people would get together, and they made a big deal out of saying it's pretty much a unanimous decision that everybody who's been working on this story for so long and looking through clues, and of course, DNA evidence has changed dramatically in 2 decades, so they're taking that into account. They went out of their way to say that it's pretty much a unanimous decision over who the killer was. Do you already know who it was?
No.
Who would be your educated guess?
I really thought that, what was my theory back then? I thought that John Ramsey was taking advantage of his daughter, and Patsy found out and got jealous and killed her daughter. That's what I had originally thought.
Mm. Hmm. Interesting. That was not their conclusion. Now, keep in mind, this isn't a reveal on who the murderer is. This is a reveal on who they said the murderer is on the show on CBS.
Right, because if it was who the murderer was, this
they'd
person...
be behind bars.
But now, all this DNA, because she was assaulted, and I remember that was the first time I heard a garrote, remember? It was something that was around her neck.
Yeah.
And don't
to strangle her?
Yes.
Is that what it was used for? Yeah.
And don't they still have, like, does DNA evidence go bad?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what the shelf life is on DNA evidence. I don't think so because they have solved crimes from way prior to this with DNA evidence. So I can't imagine 20 years being any kind of cutoff.
And it's preserved, one would imagine, for times in the future where there might be a break in the case.
Right.
Right?
You would think, yeah. Their findings over on CBS.
Can you give me like a hint or a clue or...
It's a name that...
her brother.
Yeah. Her brother,
well,
Burke.
Well, they said that before. And he was just on, what, Dr. Phil?
He has been very public. The father, John, has not been public at all of late, but the brother, Burke, has made several statements in the last couple of weeks. I'm sure he was not too thrilled to find out that among these investigators, he was... the odds-on favorite to be the murderer of JonBenet Ramsey, his sister.
Wasn't that brought up when this case first started?
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember how they quickly discounted it. I can't remember the particulars on why they said it couldn't have been him, but he seemed, you know, remember when we had the investigator on from the other JonBenet Ramsey, they said the first thing they did was look at the family because that's what kind of made sense in the situation.
Absolutely. The ransom note that was allegedly written and it
left-handed.
Like, yeah, Patsy's in paper that was found in their house.
Right.
Mentioning a ransom sum, which is the bonus that John got that year.
Yeah.
It was just
that
too
was a
coincidental.
Strange coincidence.
And she died of ovarian cancer.
Yeah, several years ago.
Yeah.
And then remember I said, because this was a theory that was kind of hushed about during the trial, was that if the Ramsey family didn't have an insane amount of money, this case would have been solved very, very quickly. And I said to her that day, is that true? She said, oh, yeah, that is true.
But I don't really understand that because that means that they're guilty.
Well, that would indicate that they had the ability to either make evidence change or disappear, or if somebody needed to be silenced or not give testimony, they could easily have somebody write a check to say, hey, it's best that this part of the story does not come out. So
well,
let's
then
keep
they
this.
Have to be guilty if they don't want the
you
truth to come out.
It's I can't say it's impossible, but it seems nearly impossible that with all the revelations in DNA evidence that this isn't a crime that's been solved. That seems near impossible, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the woman we talked to said it's never going to be solved.
Right.
I don't believe that. Someday the truth will come out.
They're
someone's
not working on it anymore, though.
Well, something's going to happen.
It's
somebody's going to talk and something's going to happen.
CBS investigators pointed a finger at a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey case during the conclusion of the two-part special, The Case of JonBenet Ramsey. Their four-hour documentary fingered brother Burke Ramsey. No surprise to viewers of the first night of the program. I didn't see either night. Did you?
No.
I wanted to and there was other stuff on. I didn't see it. The investigation found that the killing was not intentional, That's interesting. But implicated the family in covering up the crime.
Because they didn't want their son to go to jail.
Yeah. Many found Burke's appearance on the Dr. Phil show to be suspicious. However, he has not been formally charged with any crime.
And probably never will
be. He won't be. Twitter reaction to the accusation was swift and not at all surprised. Viewer reaction to the program has been mixed overall. Although you could say that about The People versus O.J. Simpson, and it just did really well at the Emmy Awards. I remember even us, ardent fans of the show, watched it and went, this is like the hokiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, we
can't wait for the next episode.
We could not wait.
I know. The reaction was mixed, with critics saying that it failed both as trash viewing and as an investigation. Some still didn't believe that Burke had done it. Well, it's not conclusive. It's just a bunch of guys that they hired to do the show to come in and look around and go, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's the brother. It doesn't prove anything. Naturally, theories about the killer abounded before the program, and now they still abound since the program is just entertainment and not an actual investigation. I'm sorry I missed it. I kind of wanted to see it. I don't know that I could have sat through 4 hours of it. That seems a little excessive.
How old was JonBenet when she was killed? Do we have that information?
I believe 6, but I'm not 100%
sure. And
he
was older by how much?
Yeah, a few years older.
Okay, because they were saying, you know, that in a videotape interview administered by a child interview specialist, yeah. Burke was playful and lighthearted.
Art Linkletter? Is it Art Linkletter?
He didn't want this case.
Because kids do say the darndest
things.
Yeah, they do. He knew that.
But that explains why Burke was playful and lighthearted through the timestamp indicated that it's January 8th. This was about 2 weeks after his sister was killed. He had no concern about his security and told the specialist, I'm basically just going on with my life. Yeah. If he's like 8 years old, that's not that unnatural for a kid of that age to... You haven't even really comprehended what happened. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so tricky because you know at that age that something horrible has happened.
I was 10 when my dad died, Bill. I knew he died. I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen cousins in quite a long time.
Yeah.
And we were running in and out of the funeral home in the other rooms, kind of hiding around the caskets in other rooms. I mean, it didn't even really...
But there's a big difference between that and somebody... Now, they're saying if he was responsible, they're looking at this as an accidental death. But even if you even accidentally killed somebody, you would have... I'm trying to find his exact age at the time. She was 6 years old. I found that.
And here's what the investigators surmised that JonBenet made...
He was 9. He was 9 at the time.
Okay, seriously, 10 years old. I knew my dad died. I cried. I looked at other people crying. He's dead. I don't know. At 10, I didn't really know exactly mm-hmm. what that meant. I don't think it's that rare of a 9-year-old kid to be all like, yeah, I don't know what happened. I'm just going to go on with my life. He heard adults say that. You haven't figured out how to cope with something that tragic at that age.
I know you're not fully developed at 9, but you still kind of get the concept
not
of
100%.
You don't think so?
I almost
forever loss. You wouldn't get that at 9?
Really?
No?
Not certainly not very soon thereafter my father's death.
But then also, how do they say to him or coach him? Because this was a long, long, long investigation, even though he was 9 years old. So wouldn't somebody have to take him aside and say, look, here's some questions that they're going to ask you. You can't give them the correct answers because if you do, they'll realize you were involved in this.
And you're saying that would have been hard to get a 9-year-old to remember all that. And
remember Balloon Boy? He couldn't pull it off. Remember the kid in the balloon who kept throwing up
yeah.
every time they asked him a question?
Yeah.
He was about that age. And that was just pretending to be in a balloon.
He didn't
want to
lie.
Worse.
The investigators surmise. Can we take a quick break? Because I have to tell you what their... how it happened.
Sure.
Can we share
yeah,
that?
Absolutely. All right. So that's what's coming next. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We are talking about JonBenet Ramsey, and there was a CBS special that was on. All the experts that were gathered pretty much pointed the finger at Burke.
Burke Ramsey, her brother, 9 years old at the time. JonBenet was 6 years old at the time. He's been very vocal in recent weeks. I don't know if he knew that the outcome of this CBS show would be to say, yeah, it was the brother who did it. Although they did say accidentally, you and I were saying, if you're the parent and you see this and you're extremely grief-stricken, you still say to yourself, well, this is clearly an accident.
You call the police. Here's what the investigators surmised, that JonBenet made her brother mad, perhaps by stealing a piece of pineapple he was snacking on. Now, this is important because a bowl on the kitchen table and the contents of JonBenet Ramsey's stomach helped lead to that theory. Then in retaliation, Burke hit her on the head with a flashlight. That's what they're speculating. Some members of the team did not think he had an intent to kill, but believed John and Patsy had an intent to mislead the and cover up the events.
So then they would quickly come up with a scenario by which there was a ransom note. And there was also, like you said before, there was signs of strangulation. So all that, when did all that happen?
Maybe post-mortem.
It would have to.
That's so bizarre. I mean, you call the police, you say, okay, we have a serious problem here. My son hit my daughter on the head. We need an ambulance.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, he killed her, but was it intentional? Wasn't that an accident? You know, I mean, I offer way too much information, so I would be arrested for doing nothing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just don't know why you'd go through all this crazy stuff to cover up what...
what was clearly an accident, if that's the way it played out. Yeah.
Oh, I know. God. I don't know. All right, here's a question. Sandy, you have a great question.
I mean, okay, if you went to this extreme of crazy cover-up over an accident, you wouldn't get rid of the bowl of pineapple?
It's the first thing you'd do.
Exactly.
That's true.
That's the part that drives me crazy, because they always bring up the pineapple.
Yeah.
It's like, why wouldn't you have gotten rid of that? That would have been the first thing you did.
All right. So that's a good question.
Very, very good idea.
I had mentioned my dad was 10 years old when I died. I knew
when he died.
Yeah. All the time.
You're still with us.
I am for now. I knew he died. I knew what that meant. But at the actual wake and funeral, I don't know that it...
You realize the finality of it all, though.
I don't know right that minute. It was a process for me. But, Kathy, you had a different scenario.
Well, hi, Wendy and Bill.
Hi.
I just... two things. As soon as I found out my dad died, but he was in a coma for a couple days, I was devastated because I knew I'd never see him again. I mean, it was really serious, you know. In as far as I could tell, I mean, I knew that was it for him.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, when we were at the wake and funeral, you know, now that I've been sitting at home, that was a long, you know, it was like 2 days in those days, and then the funeral was the third day. And I remember running around with my cousins, and I remember going to my cousin. If one more person comes up to me and tells me, I'm sorry, your dad died, I'm just going to start laughing because, you know, it was happening all day long.
Sure.
And sure enough, did, and I started laughing, and I'm like, and they must have thought I was, like, off my rocker. But I was messing around with my cousins and playing just like Wendy was. But I do remember recognizing how awful and serious it was.
And I did, too, like, when we got the phone call that he died. It was like, oh, wait, my God, what? I'm never going to see him again? But I'm sorry. I did, at that moment, was tragic and unthinkable.
Yeah.
But it took, you know, it took years for me to figure it all out, and it really did. I think different people grieve in different ways.
Of course.
And, you know, Burke, this was a couple weeks after JonBenet had been killed, and Burke was like, oh, I don't know, life has to go on. You know, he could have still been in shock or denial.
Yeah, or it could have been like he was in one of those moods like we were when he just heard too much about it already. You know, because it was probably going on every day.
Right.
It was. Yeah.
So we just he kind of hit a limit and he couldn't really process anymore, like you're saying.
But just the mere fact that they would have had to have coached him to say or not say certain things, that's near impossible to get a 9-year-old.
That's the part. Yeah.
All right, we have to take a break. Thank you so much for calling, Kathy. Sorry about your father. We appreciate you calling. People still want to talk about it. Can we continue after the news?
Absolutely. If you can stay on hold, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. CBS says that they have solved the JonBenet Ramsey case, but did they? News first and then back to that. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
20 years ago this December, JonBenet Ramsey was found in her own house. That was weird, too. Your kid goes missing. Wouldn't you just completely rip your house apart looking for her?
You know, I don't know. We're thinking or trying to think rationally, so you don't know what would go on if that were our story, you know.
That's a good point.
But, yeah, so many unanswered questions about this case. Although, despite the fact that there have been so many unanswered questions after 20 years, CBS said, you know what we're going to do? Bring in a panel of experts, some of our top investigators, and see what their conclusion was. Their conclusion was that the murderer was Burke Ramsey, although they said it appeared to be an accident. So that leads to a bunch of other questions.
But there were other things on the body that would indicate more than just getting hit on the head with a flashlight. Joanne, you have some of those details?
Hi. I watched a program. I didn't watch the ones that you had watched. This was something that was on the Discovery Channel. I think it was Discovery or History Channel last week. And I had always believed, like you, that all the evidence kind of pointed towards the Ramseys until I saw this. And it was a two-part series. And the things that convinced me was the prosecutor, apparently, she hired a consultant to do a private investigation. And he found multiple flaws in the police investigation. The first one was something like they said in the investigation there was no fresh footprints around the house. Actually, in the pictures, there's no snow around the house, so it's impossible that there would have been fresh footprints. Mm-hmm. Second, they said that there was no way anyone could have entered because there was no signs of forced entry. However, there was like a cage that opened up, and it had rusted, so it was not locked. You dropped down into the cage, and you could enter, and the window was broken in one of the rooms. And right below the window was a suitcase. So this investigator, his take on it was that somebody had gone in that way. They were going to put JonBenet's body in the suitcase, but encountered some sort of problem. Now, when you said that you saw that it was the brother, he also found problems with that. The first thing was, during the autopsy, they had noted some marks on JonBenet's cheek and neck. And, sorry, I'm a little nervous.
That's all right.
No, you're doing fine.
So they actually... They took a pig and anesthetized the pig and shaved off the skin and used a taser, and it left the exact marks that were on JonBenet's neck. So there's no reason, if she was going with her brother, he would have needed to tase them. And they did a full inspection of the house, and there was no taser in the home. The postmortem also showed that the hit to the head was actually done after she had been strangled, and she was alive at the time of strangulation because there are nail marks along the ligatures where she was trying to pull at the ligature while she was
to get that off. Yeah.
And there's no way a parent, especially, it seems, if the mother, and I mean, it's hard to say because you only see what the media presents to you, but I mean, she was kind of doting on JonBenet, taking her to all these places. And
the beauty pageants.
Yeah, and people speculated that it was her initially because JonBenet was a bedwetter and perhaps she had lost her temper. But even if you had struck your child, to sit there and actually strangle the child, she doesn't fit the case. Anyway, the private investigator apparently died a few years ago. He didn't have the cooperation of the police in that area. And actually, it showed on this program that his case files are available. And it was because of the information that the prosecutor received from this investigator that they decided never to prosecute the Ramseys.
Hmm.
Boy, did you pay attention,
Joanne. Yeah, great job, Joanne. Great job.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
it. No problem. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
If you'll remember, the woman that we had on, who was on one of the JonBenet specials, was talking about the fact that there was no sign of forced entry anywhere in the house. However, John Ramsey had mentioned that in the previous summer, this took place on Christmas night, the previous summer, he had an accident by one of the windows and accidentally broke the window, and they never replaced it.
He got locked out of the house or something, so he broke a window to get in.
Right, and they had never replaced it, which seems a little sketchy.
Well, that could happen.
I guess. But if you were going to, if your goal was to go into that house and kidnap a child, how fortunate would it have been to have found the one entrance with easy access, that a window that wasn't replaced? That seems a little unlikely. I mean, the whole thing is unlikely.
But think of it this way. If John Ramsey lost his keys and wanted to break into his own house, he went to that window thinking, oh, I'm going to get in that window. Maybe someone who's trying to break into a house would check that window that was kind of out of the ordinary as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are so many things. Pat, you have a comment?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Pat.
First of all, I wanted to tell you that I moved from Illinois about 4 months ago to Colorado Springs, and I miss you so much, but I finally am now streaming you on my tablet, so it's good to hear your voices.
Thank you, Pat.
Yay.
That's so nice of you.
And
great.
And congrats that you know how to do that, because if Bill had to resort to streaming for
I'd
somewhere...
I'd never hear the show again. I'd be done. Congrats.
Anyway, you know what? I was also thinking, how would a nine-year-old make up a garage? I had no idea what a garage was until my sister explained to me what it was. And I'm sure when Burke, I think that's his name,
it is,
was nine, he probably did not have access to the Internet.
There was no Internet.
Not 20 years ago. Limited. Very limited.
You know, the woman that you talked to before me, I watched the same special.
Yeah.
And she got and I watched all the details. And they also said there was a footprint on the suitcase. And also, the suitcase, why they didn't put her in that is because they couldn't get the suitcase through the open window.
Oh, all right. That makes some sense. So based on what you saw, Pat, in that special, the CBS version kind of implicated the fact that it was the brother, that it was Burke Ramsey. Did they lean in any specific direction with who the murderer was in the other one?
You know what? I never got that that inclination that it was the brother. I never got that feeling it was the brother.
Hmm.
And then they mentioned that she was sexually assaulted. How would a nine-year-old, of course, maybe I'm naive, how would a nine-year-old know to sexually assault his sister?
Well, I don't know. Have they been specific on to the extent of the sexual assault? Have they been?
Yeah. I believe it was with some other objects.
Oh.
And, okay. Yeah.
Excuse me for interrupting you, but they also said that when the JonBenet was taken to the doctor, he said there was never any idea, anything that showed him that she was sexually assaulted.
So they discounted that theory.
They did, exactly.
On that particular special.
On that special, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of conflicting reports, but boy, we're still curious about it 20 years later.
Yes, we are.
Pat, thank you so very much, and thanks for listening. Janice wants to jump in. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I watched the previous program also, and I also watched last night. And he had hit her with a golf club years ago.
The brother did?
Yeah, because Burke. She had a scar on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And about coming in through the window, they had actual pictures of the whole crime scene. And there were cobwebs on the edges of the window. And they tried everything, every way to try to squeeze in, and they couldn't squeeze in inside the window. Because without disturbing the cobwebs, and the cobwebs were taken, the picture was taken after the murder.
Oh, all right. So that takes that window, that way of entry out of the equation.
Right.
Interesting.
And plus, the grand jury indicted both parents, but the prosecutor didn't go ahead with the indicting them. Several people resigned because they said that it was politics.
That's a shame. It really is.
Well, that's if you'll remember when all this went down. So the crime was 20 years ago and the trial was 17 or 18 years ago, right? Does that sound about right?
Well, there was no trial. There was just a grand jury.
The grand jury investigation.
Yeah, right.
So that's when the theory arose that if this wasn't a well-to-do, very rich family, things would have played out differently.
Right, exactly.
Janice, thank you for those details. Also, someone has texted Bill and Wendy. They made a lot of interesting points on the show, one being that the police could not have charged Burke because he was only 9, and in Colorado, you have to be at least 10 to be charged. They said even if he came out now, like to Dr. Phil or whomever, they said they still couldn't arrest him because he was only 9 at the time of the crime. And you'd think a parent would call and say, listen, this was terribly tragic. There's been an accident, and one of my kids is extremely injured.
Right.
And then it turns out she died. I still don't think they would have done anything to him.
It's hard to imagine, because you could easily make, even a poor attorney could make the argument, he's not even of the age yet of understanding exactly what has gone on. It's an accident. It seems so easy. I don't know why. And then the cover-up itself would have been so much more complicated than the crime.
And somebody said, you know, if you did murder your child or you were aware of it, how could you go upstairs and write this lengthy ransom note?
Right.
Still so many unanswered questions.
All right, a break and then some final thoughts on this. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're trying to figure out if CBS is correct or incorrect, as they have decided over at CBS, who the murderer of JonBenet Ramsey is. The case is 20 years old, so several networks have programming devoted to the JonBenet Ramsey case. CBS just did a 4-hour documentary spread out over 2 nights called The Case of JonBenet Ramsey. At its conclusion, they had a bunch of top investigators try to figure out exactly who is responsible. Their findings show that it is the brother, Burke Ramsey, who they believe is the murderer of JonBenet Ramsey.
I still think it's Patsy.
Professor Plum in the conservatory with the candlestick.
All right, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. I thought the show was excellent because it didn't point out that any one particular person. It kind of led you to your own conclusions, but they just went step by step methodically with each expert what the evidence was. And I thought years ago that the murder of this poor child was done by someone in the family. And the parents never cooperated with the police. They actually hindered the investigation. They're a very wealthy family, very proud family. And from what they were describing, the police department was very upset that this family was not cooperating, and they felt they were being stonewalled by the prosecutor to bring up other evidence. And, you know, what child would have this smirk on his face, even now as an adult, when he's interviewing with the gentleman the other day on the show? You know, he's got this smirk on his face and smile. If you lost a sibling, why would you be having this smirk on your face? But all the evidence clearly pointed that this was staged. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that the evidence clearly showed that it was staged. The ransom note had specific dollar amount. I think it was $116,000. What a weird number to ask for. I think when Mr. Ramsey got a bonus for like $118,000, it was a weird number.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't you have $250,000, $500,000, whatever it would be? And the note with the handwriting expert said there were too many consistencies with Mrs. Ramsey's writing. They used certain words like attaché case. You know, who would say that? Throw it in a bag, throw it in a suitcase. There were words linked to the words that these people would use. And, you know, like I said, I always thought the evidence clearly pointed that it was set up internally. And a proud family, a wealthy family, community, to protect their child.
Yeah.
Came up with this elaborate scheme. Yes, there was some thought into it, but I think clearly the evidence showed that it was done by someone in the house. And I always thought it was either the child or the father, mm-hmm. Personally, you know. But and even evidence with the theory that she was sexually abused. The expert last night said that they found in the autopsy report a very small microscopic piece of wood that they theorized maybe that item that Turek was used to show or stage that she was abused, but there was no evidence to that whatsoever. They interviewed a neighbor who knew the family very well, and they said that the son when JonBenet was born, got very jealous because all the attention went to her with mom.
That's probably pretty common, though, when another sibling is born.
Yeah, right. I would think that. But what they were saying, the neighbor said, was that the child had these outbursts of anger against his sister. A year prior to her death, he took a golf club and whacked her in the head. Under the eye, they said. And he had these fits of rage, of jealousy, and things like that. So, you know, I just thought the experts did it well, that the evidence, they laid it out for you. How could this happen? How could that happen? You know, the theory about the cobwebs in the window and stuff. There's no doubt about it. You couldn't get through that window without disturbing it. Yet they had photos of that cobweb at the murder scene, the day of the murder, and it was not touched at all. And that window was broke for, I don't know how long. For years. It wasn't just overnight. Why wouldn't you repair the window begin?
That's
with
what it? Bill had mentioned. And Frank, we've got to run, but it sounds like it was pretty fascinating.
Thanks, Frank.
We appreciate it. We're never going to know. Although
I don't think so.
I feel like something is going to break. Something is going to happen. Some evidence is going to be unearthed. Maybe when John Ramsey dies or something. Someday we will find out.
I hope you're right. It'd be nice to put this one to rest.
I'll be waiting.
It? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Ro and Anna come in. We'll find out what's on their show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.